Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome. It is about a minute and a half past the hour. This is The Horn, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. And I'm just tickled as can be. 3 days. 3 days back in the saddle now after having been gone for a week. I think I'm getting the hang of this business again. Weird-ass daylight savings time is upon us, so there is still daylight outside, which is going to take some getting used to. And, yeah, we're 3 days into the week. It's Wednesday. Darn straight. Week's, well, half done. We're downhill to Friday. Hump day. Hot diggity. No. You know, sure. It's all of those things. But you know what it also is and how important what it also is. Because, brethren and sistren, it's prayer meeting Wednesday. On the horn, hallelujah, glory, praise. If our minister of music would come up and get us started with our traditional prayer meeting Wednesday hymn, please, brother, if you would, amen and amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD. Just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity, yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Hallelujah, glory! Shamalama ding dong, ooh ee ooh ah ah, ting tang, willa walla bing bang. I love you. Welcome, brethren and sistren. Come on in to the Cathedral of Common Sense. Come on down, glory, that blood red carpet, and fall upon your knees at the altar. Lay your hands upon the subwoofer, and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you as you connect to the server on high, the server of reason. Amen and amen. It is prayer meeting Wednesday here on the Horn, and it's also, well, lo and behold, glory, it is the 17th day of March. Yes! It is St. Patrick's Day. So we will get the prayer meeting started with another little hymn just to get things going in the right frame of mind, because we are, after all of us, I suppose, Irish today.
We come to call with pipes and flutes and fiddles and all, in case you get we've even brought a keener. So if you're coming feeling down, just be like us and back the clown, and soon there'll be a change in your demeanor. Rum down the tootle dow, have a dee dow, doodle dum. Rum down the tootle dow, and do it on. Rum down the tootle dow, have a dee diddle doodle dum. Rum down the tootle dow, and do it on. I put me money on a horse to tackle with the race, he run away, or so I felt it, you know he told me. 20 lengths ahead of us, he ride, he can't pass the boat, and go with me, he lost the bloomin' jockey.
Feeling properly Irish now? I should hope we are. I've got another little tune to play later in the evening that you might find very interesting. I found out about it, oddly enough, from the New York Times today, and it is about as far from that music as you can possibly get. And it involves Ry Cooter, so how could you possibly go wrong? So that's coming up later in the program. By the way, a little mention, new Drive-By Truckers album, The Big To-Do, was released yesterday. And if you're a Truckers fan, you want to get your hands on it, because there is the usual, wonderful stuff on there, including a song that somehow or another will eventually make its way into, some prayer meeting Wednesday service, I assure you. Sort of put a cap take care of the whole St. Patrick's Day thing. I knew, of course, that I could count on Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com and his RDA of irony today to get this one right. Oddly enough, Ewan Finn, otherwise known as Eugene Finnerman, it's his birthday. So happy birthday to the Internet's most brilliant satirist. And he notes today, should we honor St. Patrick today just for drowning some snakes in a bay? While you cannot contest that the snake is a pest, it at least kept the English away. Adding on the history of St. Patrick, and heareth is from the first draft of the Book of Kells. And St. Patrick spoke to the happy hour crowd at the Drunken Druid's pub, "Consider all that God has to offer you." And the crowd grumbled, "Not that shamrock bit again." Patrick replied, "Obviously you are in no hurry for eternal salvation. You want immediate benefits? Okay, in my religion we don't have to sacrifice your good-looking virgins in the nearest bog. Or anywhere. In fact, we want your homeliest virgins, and we'll put them in convents." And the crowd considered this a miracle. But a bartending druid challenged Patrick, "Now what would you be wanting them homely virgins for? After all, they're still our sisters." And Patrick answered, "We'll guarantee them full-time work and gratifying jobs, teaching and terrorizing the children of good-looking former virgins." But the druid demanded, "But what kind of god would want a homely virgin?" And the crowd had to agree. Patrick shrugged and said, "The Jewish one. They have the strangest taste in shiksas." Now, wait a minute, I got that wrong. And Patrick shrugged and said, "A Jewish one? They have the strangest taste in shiksas." The druid sneered, "A Jewish god? One who can't hold his own liquor?" Patrick answered, "But he can make the liquor, distribute it, and market it. And so it was that Ireland converted." The True History of St. Patrick's Day by Ewan Finn, FinnermanWorks.com. Dandy good. And happy birthday, Eugene. A very, very happy birthday. I hope there's a I hope you've treated yourself to an extra helping of ice cream today. Eugene has an ice cream problem, if you didn't know. He's powerless over it, and absolutely. So I'm hoping he's celebrating nicely as well today, and happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you. Okay, that's out of the way. It is prayer meeting Wednesday, and consequently, we would be wholly in the wrong if we got to do what prayer meeting is for, right? Yeah, to wit. Religious insanity. I don't know if you realize this, but paranoia is running a little high, and it's not Hoya paranoia either. It's not because Georgetown's in the big dance in March or anything. No, paranoia is running high at the Vatican these days. New details emerging on allegations of child sexual abuse by a priest in the Munich Archdiocese. That was at the time led by the man who would go on to become Pope Benedict XVI. The cardinal or bishop or whatever he was, Ratzinger. And with news of this coming out, of course, the Vatican responds in the way that the Vatican can be expected to respond, claiming that, of course, this is nothing more than a campaign against the Pope. That's right. When a priest did very unpriestly things, to a little boy or little boys, it was nothing but a campaign against the Vatican and against the Pope himself, even though he wasn't Pope when it was happening right under his nose. There's a little problem with that, however, even in the fact set of Holy Mother Church itself. A Vatican official who's been overseeing the investigations that are internal in nature. Yeah, right, they're internal. We can't have law enforcement poking around inside the innards and perversions and sickness and twistedness of Holy Mother Church. That internal investigation has revealed some 3,000 cases of suspected abuse of young'uns. That's just in the past decade that they've become aware of them. And 20% of them had been brought to trial in, I know, sit down, try not to shoot green beer out your nose when I say this. 20% of them were brought to trial in Vatican courts. I know. Reverend Federico Lombardi said, quote, "It was evident that in recent days there are those who have tried with a certain aggressive tenacity in Regensburg and in Munich to find elements to involve the Holy Father personally in issues of abuse. It is clear that those efforts have failed. Really? That word, failed, I don't think it means what he thinks it means. Because, come on, one of the abusers? Now, at least we don't have evidence yet that he was one of the sexual abusers, but certainly one of the abusers was, come on, wait for it, yeah, George Ratzinger. Wait, didn't he play Cliff Clavin on Cheers? Oh, no, that's George Ratzenberger. George Ratzinger, brother of the Pope, has admitted that during the time when he was running a renowned German boys' choir in the 1960s, he said he was absent. I know nothing whatsoever about allegations of sexual abuse at the Regensburger Domspatzen boys' choir. I know nothing. Nothing. I didn't do it. And even if I did do it, I was only following orders. Right? Yeah. But he did admit that while he wasn't buggering the members of the boys' choir, he did slap them around a little bit. You're flapping the Ave Maria! Flapping the Ave Maria! God does not like this! We have ways of making you sing on key, you little vermin! Yeah, no kidding. The brother of the Pope slapped around little boys put in his charge to sing in a choir to the greater glory of Almighty God. God does not like it when you do not hit his holy nuts! Or maybe the kid wasn't flattened. Maybe when... Father? The Monsignor over there stuck his thingy in my shoes, and I don't like it. Shut up! We do not talk about such things in the school! There was probably a phone conversation at some point between George Ratzinger and his brother, the future Pope. Mein Bruder! Do you know what the problem is with these little boys in this choir? They just don't know when to shut up! Asked about the sexual abuse problems. Problems. The sexual abuse. Crimes! George Ratzinger said, these things were never discussed. The problem of sexual abuse that has now come to light was never spoken of. This is the interesting part of the story. There have also been reports of severe beatings by administrators at two primary feeder schools for the choir. Feeder schools? Ew. One in Ettershausen and one in Pilenhofen. One director, identified as Johann M., who headed the Ettershausen school from 1953 to 1992, has been cited in several allegations as being particularly abusive. And George Ratzinger did say, get this, he did say that boys would open up to him about being mistreated in Ettershausen. But I did not have this feeling at the time that I should do something about it. Had I known with what exaggerated fierceness he was acting, I would have said something. Of course, today one condemns such actions. I do as well. At the same time, I ask the victims for pardon. At the beginning, I also repeatedly administered a slap in the face, but always had a bad conscience about it. He went on to say, I was happy when they eliminated corporal punishment so I no longer had to slap the little weasels. Mein Gott. These are servants of who? Christ? And he was slapping little children around, little boys? I guess that whole do unto others as you would have them do unto you thingy just sort of shot right past George Ratzinger, didn't it? But, of course, the usual Vatican tactic is to pretend it didn't happen. This from the news story. The Vatican moved to defuse criticism after the German justice minister, Sabine Lighthauser-Schnarrenberger, said Monday that a Vatican secrecy rule has played a role in a wall of silence surrounding sexual abuse of children. She cited a 2001 Vatican document drawn up by then-Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, you know, his popeness, requiring even the most serious abuse cases to be first investigated internally. And I ask a simple question. Is there any organization on planet Earth that would be allowed to hold the criminal justice system of any country at bay pending their own internal investigation? If a corporation did it, it would be open to charges of obstruction of justice. We are internally investigating the buggery of these cute little boys, and just as quickly as we are done burning and shredding all of the evidence, you may come in and investigate to your own heart's content. Otherwise, we will be compelled to excommunicate you and talk badly about you to God. Huh? On the other hand, in the bizarro world, Vatican spokesman Reverend Federico Lombardi, quoted above, said, they have shown a desire for transparency. Maybe transparent underwear, but they have shown a desire for transparency. In a way, they have accelerated bringing the problem to light by inviting the victims to speak up even when the case is dated a while back. Shh. Don't ask Father Lombardi, but why did the cases date a while back? What's Italian for obstruction of justice? What is Italian for criminal conspiracy? What is Italian for racketeering? Because those are all appropriate words to be used in the description of this whole filthy, stinking scandal. The U.S. group Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests said of the Vatican's claim that the Catholic institutions have been timely in their reaction. They said they were depressing and disingenuous. Sadly, the truth is just the reverse, said Peter Isley, Midwest director of that group. Regarding pedophile priests and corrupt bishops, the church hierarchy responds only when forced to do so by external pressures. Understatement, I think. By a long shot. Merciful God. So that's the beginning of our prayer meeting Wednesday. If you don't count the we'll get to it. The phone lines are open. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Email rolls easily into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid. @gmail.com.
And Marty writing in and saying, is that Colonel Klink from Hogan's Heroes or Dr. Strangelove from, well, Dr. Strangelove? I was thinking more of Colonel Major Hofstetter. That was the, yeah. So let's go to the phones, see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, what's up?
Well, let's see. Let's start off with another sort of a sidebar to that. Not exactly that, but something else about on religion. We did notice that the other day, or last week, I guess it is, that the Lonesome Road went on a rampage against the churchgoers.
Yes, indeedy. In fact, we discussed that at some length last night.
But what isn't it interesting? Maybe you talked about it last night. I'm sorry I didn't get to listen last night. Maybe it's interesting to me, and I saw this over at Huffington Post. Isn't it interesting to know how Pat Robertson and James Dobson and all of them are just nowhere?
Crickets.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting, though, when essentially he's saying the people who are into social... Now,
when you're too loony for Pat Robertson...
Well, and the thing of it is, think of it, when you're describing what he calls, I guess, was it social justice or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
I seem to remember some fellow named Jesus throwing people out of the temple, you know, the bankers and all that. And, you know, that would have been considered social justice, wouldn't it?
Why not?
And it's just interesting, though, that Glenn Beck is actually sitting there saying he hates Jesus.
Well, but the thing is, realistically speaking, the reason that, you know, crazy-ass Pat can't come out on this is because what Beck was saying went to the very heart and soul of Robertson's entire hustle, because while none of it ever does, Robertson was constantly going on about how it was, you know, the monies that he raised from various and sundry sources was going to spread the word of Christ and the love of Christ Jesus around the world. Oopsie.
I know, it's one of those things. It's like, Mr. Beck, can you please name some names of those people? Would Mr. Robertson be on the top of that list?
Exactly.
Let's see what else we got. Oh, I sent it to you yesterday, I think it was. Did you see the thing with Brother Dick Army now is apparently calling out Tom Tancreepy?
Yeah, Tom Tancreepy is, When even Dick Army can't stand Tom Tancreepy, you know that Tom Tancreepy's stock is pretty much valueless.
Well, I was just sitting there going, you know what this reminded me of? I think I put it in the note to you. Doesn't this sound a whole lot like in the old days when the Soviets used to have those purges? You know, and they'd call somebody out, and the next thing you know, somebody would go, who's that? I've never heard that name before. Because all evidence of them would be destroyed.
After a brief illness.
Yeah.
Yeah. State funeral, guy's goose stepping down Red Square, yeah, problem solved.
After a long illness, we know that Mr. Tancreepy has left the stage. You know, it's just one of
He's moving to his dacha to spend more time with his family.
Yes, more time with the family. If he doesn't have one, he'll spend more time with them. You know how that goes. Let's see.
You know what creeps me out about Tom Tancreepy is the idea that he was a junior high school or a high school teacher. Can you imagine how many minds he warped while he was in the school system out in Colorado?
Oh, I know. I try to even think about those things. I mean, it's like that whole thing with the Texas book thing. Isn't it amazing? Like I said, in the new textbooks, is it going to have a reference to check out the Flintstones? This is the documentary.
Well, I loved Mark Morford's column. Our buddy Dennis in Kentucky sent this along to me. Mark Morford did a column out at sfgate.com. Dear Texas, please shut up. Sincerely, history.
Well, you know, I mean, it's like, what was the thing? You saw the thing David Korn got into with this guy, what was his name? Blakeman, where he bet him $1,000. Because, like I said, it's one thing we have to watch for people on more than anything else is this idea of, oh, by the way, we can rewrite history. You know, so what if that wasn't the way it actually happened? That's the way I say it is now. So who are you going to believe, your lying eyes or what I tell you? You know, this thing where he was trying to say, oh, the reason we went into Iraq, was because they wouldn't allow the inspectors in.
Yep.
And David Corn bet him $1,000 on the spot, and he wouldn't take the bet.
Oh, no, because, you know, those liberals, they twist things with, you know, those nasty facts. Well, that's not far different from what Karl Rove said on Meet the Prestitutes.
I agree. You know, and I'm wondering when somebody other than the usual suspect is going to look at Karl Rove and say, you're lying.
Well, why? Okay, just question one, Luke. Why is Karl Rove, who works for Fox News now, why is he on Meet the Prestitutes?
I know. I agree.
But he got on there, and lo and behold, just as sure as God made little green apples, he sat there and wasn't even giggling when he said it, when he said that the Bush administration never claimed oil revenues would pay for the war in Iraq.
Who was it? Mousy looking one used to be one of the secretaries. I remember him saying that. But you know, it's like the thing about the weapons inspector. I remember Hans Blix standing in front of one of the sites when they were interviewing him, saying we just needed a couple more weeks and we'd be done doing the inspections.
Yeah.
Right after then's when they said get out of the country. We're about to turn it into a ground zero.
Yeah, and in fact, are you talking about Paul Wolfowitz?
Yeah, that's who.
Yeah,
it was.
Quote from Paul Wolfowitz: the oil revenue of that country could bring between $50 and $100 billion over the course of the next 2 or 3 years. We're dealing with a country that could really finance its own reconstruction and relatively soon.
Mm-hmm. Because he was saying that like just before they started the war, because everybody was talking about, you know, when they went in, how they were just blowing everything up, and it's like, guys, you don't have to blow the power plant up. You take out the transmission lines. You don't take the plant out. You know, and then they were like, oh, but that's much more.
But it made a much funner boom.
Yeah. It's like, guys, you take out the transmission lines, we can replace those real easy. They're still trying to replace some of the power plants.
Well, you know, bombing civilian power plants, last I checked, Luke, isn't that something that is frequently referred to as a war crime?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I'm Judge. Okay, we're in the same universe then. Good.
That's what I thought, but you know how that goes. Let's see, what else do we had? One thing about Newsweek, about good old Karl Rove, and I want somebody to bring this up. How is it that everybody in the White House, including the political advisor, seemed to know that Valerie Plame was a CIA agent? Now, you know, you might get away with saying Cheney had a reason to know, and, you know, some of the others, but Karl Rove, who is the political advisor, had no need, no right to know she was a CIA agent.
No, not at all.
You know, I mean, some of the others you might get away, you know, say they had a reason to know. He had no reason to know. I mean, that was just one of his, like, you know. And then I'd say I'd really like to have Carl on the witness stand. It's like, Carl, who told you? Just curious, we want to backtrack this. Who told you she was a CIA agent? It'd be fun to follow that little trip up and down the line.
Well, Dick Cheney did.
I know.
Yeah. Well, why did he do that? Well, because he could.
Oh, I didn't get to talk. Since we didn't get to talk last week, I tell you what, I just busted the seams. I was sitting there going after the pig man said he'd leave the country. I said, damn it, Democrats will work 24/7 for the next month.
I was hoping they would. And of course, the ultimate irony, why did he choose Costa Rica? Why did he say it was Costa Rica he would go to if we got... some sort of health care reform in this country. Why did he say Costa Rica? Why didn't he say Haiti or the Dominican Republic? Because, you see, look, Costa Rica has universal single-payer health care.
Well, I'm wondering maybe if he's got something like Pepe Bush, you know, down, was it in Colombia or Venezuela?
Paraguay.
Paraguay. I wonder if maybe Rush has some money, you know, all that money he's got. I wonder if he's hidden some of it down there.
Well, you know, the other thing about Costa Rica is even though it has the best functioning democracy in the Western Hemisphere, it is also a haven for old retired CIA creeps.
Yep. Oh, I tell you what, it's just some of this stuff when you're sitting there just looking at it, you're just like, you know, where are these things we used to call journalists? Because, you know what, there's a whole lot of good questions that every time they open their mouth, if you're sitting there going, you know, you should be asking something, like you were talking last night. You know, other than Greg Palast, or maybe Cy Hirsch, you know, there aren't any what I call investigative journalists anymore.
Right, and there's a very precious little being done, Luke, to bring along a new generation of them.
Well, the only good thing I thought, if you go over, I guess, to Comedy Central and listen to Mr. Stewart last night, he explained the whole AIG bailout, all that, in about 5 minutes. It was hilarious. You know, he just essentially said he was going to set up a dummy company and ran it through, essentially showed how they did it, just on the simple scale. You know what I mean? But you're sitting there reading, you're sitting there listening to him going, why anybody ever explained it like this? Because it makes so much sense. You know, because he was explaining how they, you know, manipulated money and all this stuff and essentially, you know, then borrowed money to pay off such and such. You know, it was just showing how it just snowballed. And you're just sitting there going, why does somebody in the news department explain it like this? It makes a whole lot of simple sense. You know, you don't have to sit there and look like one of the people on Cavuto or the Screamer over on CNBC or, you know, where after you listen to them, you're going, okay, can I hear the translation now into English? You know, when you sit here and told me about derivatives and all this other stuff, and I have no clue what you're talking about, can we try it in English just for the fun of it? But, you know, that might make sense. Let's see, what else did we have? Oh, yeah. I noticed the Republicans have probably dropped off this idea now about the claiming the morality. You know, when they were really salivating over Brother Massa, you know, and they were about ready to, you know, just start laying it down. And it's like, I'm just sitting there going, okay, let's all get the pages together. Let's see, here's the one on Mr. Vitter, the diaper man. Here's one on Mr.
Yep.
Here's one on Mr. Foley. Here's one on even Newt. Oh, we can go back into Newt. Oh, there's some fun things there.
Well, and I think that's why they backed away rather quickly.
Yeah, because everybody started putting up pictures and going, hey, we can talk about this. And we talk about the toe tapper, Mr. Craig. Oh, you know, there's so many fun ones. I remember, oh, God, what was it? Was it Brad Pitt and who did a one of the comedy bits on that? You know, somebody tapping their toe under the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh. But you know what I mean? It's just some of that stuff you're just sitting there going, you know, it's like, guys, if you really want to start throwing rocks, step out of the glass house first, please. Because like I say, if you want to throw rocks on this, we got more rocks to throw, trust me.
Well, and who was the California legislator who got busted coming away from the, well, okay, driving away, trying not to make this any more difficult than it has to be, got busted driving away from the gay bar. That guy at least had the nerve to come out the next day and say, oh, yeah, by the way, I've spent my entire political career trying to grind gay people under my heel, but I'm gay too.
But the thing of it is, and then if you really, because I tell you, the one thing that some of the Republicans, I'm sure, are just scared to hell of is, you know, there's still those handful of them that are sitting there in the Congress who we know that they are part of the group, shall we say, but they don't want to go after it because their own faces are going to be put up there on the thing. I mean, like, was it Mr. Dreyer?
Do you ever notice how the one person who never says anything about these scandals is Lindsey Graham?
Graham, and then down in Florida, Charlie Crist. You know, there's a bunch of people down there that in the Congress who don't want to start stirring that pot because a lot of stuff's going to get spilled.
Indeed.
And I say there's a lot of them in there. That's
well, and there's one out there. I've hung on to this for, I kind of saved it for prayer meeting. But, you know, out there in the land of the righteous, otherwise known as Utah, you know, back behind the Zion curtain. Did you see this story about the majority leader of the Utah House?
Yeah.
Kevin Garn. And this thing goes back to 1985. This thing goes back 25 years.
You're sitting there going, how does this not have blown up already? I mean,
goodness. Yeah, he was married. He was 30 years old. And in 1985, he took a nude hot tub with a 15-year-old employee of his. And then several years later, paid her $150,000 to shut up and stay that way, which she apparently didn't.
You know, it's one of those things.
And you know, he came out. He later admitted, of course, he brought his poor wife to stand next to him while he did it on March 11th. I mean, not it, but while he made his statement. And he said, I expect to suffer public humiliation and embarrassment. Some lessons are hard to learn. Oh, God.
I
mean, did anybody go over the script before he walked out in front of the cameras and the microphones? Some lessons are hard to learn.
I'll say, who did you call for advice, Mark Sanford? You know, God. I mean, you you know.
I was hyping the Moab Trail.
Well, the other one that's apparently he found out is not too nice to be noticed is apparently Mr. Stupak.
Oh, really? Does he have this problem, too?
No. Apparently, though, because he's made all this hoopla, people are starting to look into his history. You know, he was a member of C Street.
Oh, and, yeah, got subsidized, basically rent-controlled living arrangements for, what, years?
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. He's going to have to apparently, I don't know if he can even sort of submit it or not, but apparently there's going to be some questions asked to him about how much C Street, the family, was paying for his rent. Because that's money he should have been reporting.
That was, and that's something that the Internal Revenue Service likes to call income. And we have an income tax, though, yeah, I'm sure Bart Stupak doesn't like to admit it.
Just to remind people, I was sitting here before I called you, and I have filled out my census.
We did the same.
So
I didn't feel like it was enabling the government to come and get me.
I mean, it didn't ask any questions about how many weapons do I got. It didn't ask any questions about how long have I harbored hate for Republicans. You know, none of that came up in the questions. They were pretty much basic questions that, you know, I don't see any problem anybody asking them. But I'm sure that Michelle and Marsha will find something, because I know Michelle's already been on the warpath 3 or 4 times over this. So. Every time she talks, you just want to go, thank you.
And you know what? I'm hoping that they took her at her word in her district and they're all refusing to fill out the communist census so that maybe after the census is compiled, she can get redistricted right out of a job.
I know. Oh, and we'll tell you the one that I saw that I think I wrote this one to you. Last week when Senator Dodd told that our senator, Mr. Corker, where he could just go sit in the corner. I was sitting there going, "Hallelujah! One who's finally learned." I said, "You were paying attention to Grassley and Baucus." I said, "You learned the fact that if they sit around there and say we'll keep talking about it, all they're doing is just stalling. They're just wanting to say no. I have to go something else." And Dodd just said, "Fine, you ain't going to work. We're going to put out our own things on these the financial reforms." Because that's what it was. You know, it went from Senator Shelby, who was down there talking to it, and then it went to Senator Corker. And amazing enough, I bet 10-1 there was a list of them lined up to keep that talk just going so nothing to come to the floor on these financial reforms that the Democrats are going to push.
Oh, I don't doubt it the least.
Because, I mean, I'm sitting there going, hallelujah, somebody finally paid attention. And
well, what did you, what did, let me just ask you before we wrap up. Mm-hmm. What did you think about Dennis Kucinich's statement today?
Oh, well, you know, it's one of those things. It's like I think somebody got to him and said, Dennis, you don't want to be Ralph Nader. You know, it's like, you know, we all hope we get a perfect bill, but we're not going to.
I saw his speech, and it seemed sincerely offered.
I do too.
I guess.
But I mean, I think he's just come to that realization. You know, it's like I can't get everything I wish, and I wish you could, but you can't. So I think he's decided we'll get the best we can now, and in a couple of years may come back and revisit it, try again. So that's about the only thing I figure we can do with it. You know what I mean? The thing that you hate so much is like people said, you know, why is the first thing we did before we even went to the table, we said single payer's off the table. No.
And you know what? That has when I sat in that Progressive Media Summit last week, a week ago today, that was acknowledged as having been a significant mistake.
Oh.
For what it's worth.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I mean, this is one of those things. It's like, okay, gang, we're going to play cards. But, of course, I'm going to put the blindfold on now. So I'll be at a slight disadvantage.
Right. Exactly.
You have to tell me what cards I've got. Well, but I'll tell you what. I'm going to let you go on because I know you got other people to talk to. How you feeling about basketball?
You know, I felt rather slighted by the fact that the poor little Duke had to get the last number one seed. But by the same token, when you look at because Duke, you know, Duke's road to the Final Four, is a road paved with cupcakes.
Well, I'll be happy. We're living in murderer's row.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, if it all works out for us, we wind up fighting for that spot with Kentucky. Oh, congratulations. But the nice thing is we're fairly close to home, and Mountaineers are prone to traveling.
Well, the only good part about it was, and it wasn't, nobody was happy about it, but they didn't enjoy being a sixth seed. And the thing of it is, that's a good thing. It made them angry. You know, when you sit there and you go, well, let's see, now we've beat Kentucky and we've beaten Kansas. We're 13th in the nation and we're a sixth seed. But something here just don't sound right.
Yeah, I think the seeding would have been higher if the Kentucky game would have been better.
But the thing of it is, though, if you want to say that that counted against us, then why didn't the Mississippi State game count for them? Because Mississippi State...
Oh, without a... That's the biggest screw job in the... Why?
Because, I mean, one point
Virginia
away, they're in. It's the SEC champion.
Virginia Tech got in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, why did Virginia Tech get in and Mississippi State didn't?
Well, you know, it's all their nice little arcane numbers, and that's fine. You know what I mean? But it's like I say, with some people, maybe Mississippi State, they'll send them the NIT, and they'll just kick butt up and down the side.
Yeah, although Seton Hall's coach, after losing his first game in the NIT last night, promptly lost his job today after a whole bunch of scandals and so forth. So,
well, like I say, we'll wait and see. We're playing San Diego State.
Yeah. And I forget who the little bubblehead was who was predicting San Diego State would take that game. But
We've had two or three. I mean, what's the guy down in Atlanta? He'll never pick Tennessee. But you know what I mean? There's different ones, and most of them are picking San Diego State, and we're like, good. Keep pouring it on. That puts our guys in just such a fun mood.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Luke, have yourself a great evening. We'll talk soon.
That.
All right,
bye
now.
Bye.
From the hills of East Tennessee, that's our buddy Luke, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
Hey, Matt Osborne. What's up?
Oh, got a whole lot of stuff going on in the world today. Of course, Wednesday's always a busy day to begin with, and we're just covered in morons all week long. I'm sitting here reading off some tweets. Of course, you heard about Mr. Eric Erickson, I'm sure.
Yeah, sickeningly so.
Yeah. Mr. Eric Erickson, who, as your listeners probably know, is the man behind Red State, that, would you call it a conservative blog? I'm not even sure conservative really describes it.
No. Red State is a toxic, feral swamp of nastiness. I mean, when you look at some of the things that Eric Erickson has said over there, let's see. I got a little list here. And by the way, you know, Eric Erickson has been tapped by CNN to be its latest political commentator on the best political team on television.
Right.
Yeah. Let's see. Feminists, Eric Erickson said they need to, quote, get in the kitchen and learn to cook. He said of retiring Supreme Court Justice David Souter, who was, by the way, appointed by a Republican president, just saying, called him a goat-effing child molester.
Mm-hmm.
Barack Obama's supporters he calls brown shirts, goons, and thugs.
Uh-huh.
This is elevated political commentary. You know, I don't sit out here suggesting that I ought to be on CNN because I'm not nearly polite enough.
You just don't suffer the stupid.
Right. I think I've been known to refer to a right-wing thug as a thug from time to time.
And with Erickson, he's really an operative. He's been for a long time.
Sure he is.
And all you have to do is look at, I've got the Washington Post pulled up right here. This is Dateline February 1st of this year. Just read this. In November, the morning after Election Day, a conservative blogger in Georgia blasted an email to 65,000 people. Eric Erickson's 5 a.m. morning briefing seemed counterintuitive. The election of a Democrat to a U.S. House seat in upstate New York held by Republicans for more than a century, he wrote, was a huge win for conservatives. Yet the missive immediately was posted online by the conservative publication Human Events, a corporate sibling of Erickson's blog Red State. It next reached the website of the American Spectator magazine, whose publisher, Alfred S. Reenery, sits on the board of the conservative publishing house that owns Red State and Human Events. So it ricochets around inside the Beltway. And Erickson basically sets the tone for all the Republican response to this election in New York State. So, yeah, he is a Republican operative from way back.
Yeah, and it goes and eventually it filters down into the gelatinous, drug-addled mind of Flush Flimball, who declares, "My friends, we kept a horrible Republican from possibly winning."
There you go, exactly. Okay, so his talking points wind up all over the wingnutosphere. And I've got some things I've pulled up here. Mr. Erickson is described here by someone on Twitter as go-to bigot, misogynist, and homophobe on best political team on TV. This is a pretty crazy example of CNN sort of being transformed into a new Fox News.
They want to be that so bad they can taste it. They have yet to figure out that, you know, you don't want that market. What you want is the other side of the demographic. You want get the liberals. You know, we have money too. We spend.
Oh, yes, and we watch television too.
Yeah.
You know, and what really kills me is that I like many, many Americans, probably getting to be most of America. I only get CNN for my news. That I have only basic cable. There are a lot of people who are just like me. They don't get to watch MSNBC. They don't get to watch Fox.
You don't get Fox?
I don't get Fox.
I would rather have your basic cable because I have basic cable too, and now the only news I get is Fox.
Well, see, there you go.
Going back to last night's program, which means I don't get any news at all.
Right.
Because Fox News is a brand name.
It is noise. You get fake noise is what you get.
Yeah, precisely.
Now, there is somebody on Twitter who goes by the name Shock Value. Have you ever seen Shock Value? He goes by @Shock, S-H-O-Q.
No.
He's a very valuable resource. He's one of the best progressive voices out there. Capital S-H-O-Q is his handle. And he just tweeted this out a little while ago. This is an article from 2005. This is CNN's new boss. You remember Jonathan Klein became the new president of CNN. He was on the Charlie Rose show, and he said, Rose asked if there could ever be a successful progressive version of Fox News Channel, and Klein didn't seem to think so. And he said that Fox is tapping into a brand of, quote, mostly angry white men. This is what he said. A, quote, unquote, progressive or liberal network probably couldn't reach the same sort of an audience because liberals tend to like to sample a lot of opinions. They pride themselves on that. And, you know, they don't get too worked up about anything, and they're pretty morally relativistic. And so, you know, they allow for a lot of that stuff.
Well, they do. And I don't know if you saw this or not, Matt, but I hope I'm saying this right, Ches Pazienza had a post over at Huffington.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, CNN knows what it's getting with Erickson. This is the quote. Let me find it here. Yeah, here it is. Twitter users have spent the past 12 hours inundating CNN political reporters and managers' accounts with bloodthirsty outrage, which I think it was just a BS. That bloodthirsty outrage, really? Liberals, please? Bloodthirsty outrage and a barrage of questions as to why CNN would allow itself to be so blatantly taken for a ride by the right, the implication seeming to be that somehow CNN wasn't fully aware of just who Erickson was when it hired him and that the network hadn't properly vetted him. And Pazienza says, except that it was, and it did. CNN knew exactly what it was getting with this creep. It wanted what it was getting with this creep.
Yes.
And the sad thing is, if this is what they're going to hire, then this means that to one degree or another, The political discourse will be, I don't know if it probably seems impossible, but Matt, it will be further cheapened, further coarsened. And, you know, the question is, you know, is CNN under the impression that there's nobody out there, lobbing, you know, lobbing verbal fireballs from the so-called left? Because there are.
Exactly. Now, what the formula is, you get a centrist on there. You get a centrist instead of a progressive or a liberal. You get someone in the middle, and you let them argue with the right winger, and you move the center to the right. That's what you effectively wind up doing by that.
Right.
Sam Feist, who is the political director of CNN and the person who first tweeted out yesterday that Eric Erickson was going to be joining CNN, just listen to this. This is just a couple hours old. This is his tweet today. CNN, healthcare vote count. 204 against, all caps, against passage. GOP needs 12 more Dems to declare against the bill to kill. What kind of slant does that sound like? What does that statement sound like? It sounds like that tweet came from a Glenn Beck account.
Yeah, or any Fox account, yes. And, you know, what Pazienza says in closing his piece, he says, what this will lead to is simply more of what Jon Stewart once justly decried as partisan hackery from CNN's political analysts. But once again, make no mistake, the kind of ridiculous, entirely predictable conflict that's sure to arise from Eric Erickson and whatever liberal counterpart they put against him is just what CNN wants to see on television. Feist and company think it'll make for great TV, and it probably will, but it'll make for really mind-numbing political discourse.
And I want to point out to you that Christiane Amanpour, who was just about the best thing left at CNN, she's apparently going to leave for ABC this week. So it looks to me like CNN is basically a lost cause at this point. And Mr. Shock Value has started a new account called Dump CNN. This is a Twitter account and a Facebook account to dump CNN. And I would encourage your listeners to dump CNN. Their contact information is on my blog. You can tell them that you are dumping them. Stop watching them. Let them know you're not going to watch them anymore.
Well, frankly, you know, there may still be some who do, but I would say, I would hazard a guess, Matt, that the vast majority of the Horn family gave up on television so-called news a long time ago. Just because,
I would imagine you're probably,
you know,
right.
Just because the Horn family is politically savvy in the extreme to begin with. And there's nothing to be gained by sitting in front of the television and watching the corporate for-profit media hype, because it, you know, even calling it news anymore is demeaning. It's demeaning to the concept.
Right, exactly. It's not even news anymore, and it's not new. It's the same recycled stuff over and over again. You know, I keep likening the John Birchism of yesteryear to what we keep seeing these days. I mean, remember Obama gave his back to school speech and, oh, it's socialist mind control of our children. What does that sound like? That sounds like fluoridated water. It's just the same nonsense over and over again. They take the old idea, they just update it for today, and they just push it back out again. It's the same thing over and over again, recycling.
Yeah, and David in South Carolina noting that CNN hired Fran Townsend, too.
There you go.
So, you know.
Yeah, it's we're leaving behind the days when media actually meant anything anymore. I think we're in an age of major media fail.
And you know, it will continue to do that. The only people I was engaged in a little exchange of information earlier today, and the thing I pointed out about what I spent the first hour and a half of the program doing last night, talking about Howell Raines's pearl clutching op-ed piece over at the Washington Post on Sunday, just noting that you know, there's a segment of the population of this country, Matt, that doesn't understand that there's a problem. They've been watching this garbage for so long that they think it is normal.
Yes.
When it is anything but.
It's not. It's not normal at all. This is not news. This is not media. This is not journalism. You know, as a matter of fact, I've got something else I wanted to bring up to you because it is a Wednesday prayer meeting. And you remember I brought up the birther commercial a few months ago?
Yeah.
The birther infomercial. Just to remind your listeners, it's a fax scam, all right, playing to late-night rubes across the South. You pay $35 for something that costs them about 3 cents to do, which is to fax all the state attorney generals and the attorney general of the United States demanding the birth certificate, blah, blah, blah. It turns out, do you remember the guy's name who did this commercial?
Offhand, no.
Gary Creep, if you can believe that. His name is Gary Creep.
Okay.
All right. The video was produced by a 501c4 for-profit corporation, right? But it turns out that Mr. Creep is also the executive director of a California-based political action committee called, wait for it, the Republican Majority Campaign. And according to TPM, this is up in my blog, according to TPM, nearly all of the $1.7 million it raked in from conservative donors last year, less than 2% of that money went to supporting candidates or independent political spending.
Oh, well, you know, that's the norm, isn't it, Matt? I mean, consider the Caribou Barbie.
There you
know, spending her PAC's money buying her own book
and
funneling the money to herself.
And she and Bachman will be charging $10,000 for everybody who wants to get their picture taken with them. The revolution will be monetized, Bob.
Very well, yes.
All right, Bob, I'm going to get off the phone. I have to go eat corned beef and cabbage now.
Oh, yummy. Wish I had some.
Well, I'll save some for you.
Yeah, just pack some in a styrofoam cooler and ship it up, would you?
That's what I'll do.
All right, we'll talk to you later, Matt.
Now.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's our buddy Matt Osborne from Osborne, Inc., OsborneInc.com, OsborneInc.com. He's an everyday read. And stays awfully well on top of current trends as they develop. He's done a great job with the Acorn scandal that isn't about Acorn, but rather about the people who created the scandal. He's done a wonderful job with that, and got way out front on this Eric Erickson business too. And to the extent that you stop on CNN or something on the way across, you've now got officially one less reason to do so. Honest to God. Lines open if you want to jump in. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333, and we continue onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra, what's up?
Hey, listen, I'm loving all these primary challenges. They just popping up everywhere.
Oh,
I mean, has there been like some groundwork laid over the last couple of years to sweeten the pot, because they seem to be coming fast and furious? I was like, Stupak. You know,
Stupak's got him one.
And that Blanche Lincoln, she actually, you know, the senator from Walmart, she actually could lose. You know, that's a good one.
But did you catch the big endorsement that she got, Sandra?
Oh, from who?
Clinton.
Oh, well, Miss Clinton or Mr. Clinton?
Mr.
Oh, well, whatever. You know, I'm not, how do you, I mean.
I was reading Bart Cop the other day, and he asked a legitimate question, you know, why would he do that? And, you know, it probably didn't get published or anything, but I just shot him a note saying, listen, the reason for that's pretty easy. Blanche Lincoln is a wholly owned subsidiary of Walmart, and Mr. Clinton is a profound friend of Walmart.
Exactly. No, I'm about to say, it's like he put the DLC in the place that it is today, Clinton. You know, as we said before, he was the best Republican president in a generation or two, you know?
Well, exactly. And
I know it's sort of, you know, bitchy saying that, but if you evaluate Clinton's record, please, it's more in line with Eisenhower than any sort of Democrat I can.
Well, sure, it would. Yeah, there's no getting around that, because that was the purpose behind the creation of the DLC.
Right. So, you know, wasn't Hillary on the Walmart board? Wasn't that contentious for a minute?
Yes, she was. And
I'm all shocked, and I'm thinking, well, why are they shocked? You know,
at one point, there was a big kerfuffle over the fact that, Bill and Hillary came out and said, you know, we've worked with Walmart, and they're going to become the greenest corporation in the United States, you know, in terms of packaging and products offered and yada, 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 yada. Hey, you know, a green Walmart, that's kind of like a clean oil spill to me, but, you know, that's because I'm cranky, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's also, that falls under the same rubric as, clean coal, which is just gibberish, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, Walmart is too much of a monopoly. I'll say it again, it's a monopoly. It ain't gonna, why would it go green?
Where's the incentive? Well, no, the incentive for them to green their own facilities is to save them money on their power bill.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm just saying, though, it's like, it's a monopoly. I don't know what else to call Walmart, because what they do controls the movements of other competitors, and not in a good way. So, you know, as far as competition goes, that's, you know, another myth that is constantly being shoved down our throat day in and day out. But anyway, that the primary there, and what happened in Colorado? Didn't someone get dismissed?
I may have missed that.
Yeah, I can't. Actually, I just caught it. You know, I should come with my information, but I just, you know, it just sort of sounds like someone else, another sort of pseudo demo, lost. You know, and what's replacing them are more, quote, progressives, which is a surprising trend. It's interesting to look at.
Well, you know, but this whole trend all starts with Donna Edwards in Maryland.
Oh, yeah, no, hell yeah. And the fact that she stayed true, you know, I have to say I'm cynical, but I'm real happy to see that she's still holding strong, you know, because I always think these people get sucked in, and the next thing you know, they're...
I've met her a couple of times, and she seems fairly genuine.
It's great. She seems to be following in the same footsteps as what's home chick name? Barbara Lee? You know,
yeah,
sort of.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at her and I always have just the utmost respect, because I'll never forget when she voted no against that. Remember that?
Yep, I do indeed.
It was stunning. But anyway, the Stupak thing, I mean, please, you know, that they need to be taught a lesson than people. They need to go away.
Why is Stupak, why is he caucusing with the Democrats?
Well, that's the thing, and it's sort of the never-ending, trend to the center, blah, blah, blah. I'm so sick of it.
I know, and frankly, if this woman can defeat him, more power to her.
Well, and even if not, though, Bob, just the idea of doing what the conservatives do so well, primary all these bitches, because they might be a little bit more scared. You see what I mean? They might.
Well, I've made that argument for years now, Sandra, that the time to get active is not during the general election season.
Yeah, who cares?
No, the time to get active is during the primary season and put the fear of God in these people.
And if you want the base, the active base, to come out, just like they do on the right, they will do on the left. You see what I'm saying? It's like the game is the same across the board in that respect, except for the lack of media. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But for these organizations to be, you know, I forget the one with, I guess it's James Hampshire, maybe these people who have started these fundraisers for, you know, progressive candidates. I mean, it's starting to bear fruit, I see.
Well, I hope it does. I've got real misgivings about what Jane Hampshire has done lately.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
And my heart doesn't bleed for Marcus Melitzis either.
No. I never was drinking the Kool-Aid on him, actually. I don't, you know. Even way back, I mean, it was interesting. But, yeah, once these people get a taste of the power, that was so predictable, Bob. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, and what kind of blew me away with Jane's, you know, say no Dennis campaign, and it's and I think you know for me that this is, you know, this is a real moral problem. This isn't an insurance problem. This isn't a healthcare problem. This, from my perspective, it's a moral problem, because a country that doesn't give a damn about its struggling component, who are largely working class, you know, not some indolent indolent bonbon eating underclass with, you know, three cars on blocks in the front yard. But it's working class, it's uncovered, uninsured working class, to cavalierly say, no, we'll kill this bill and wait another generation. I got to the point, Sandra, where I can't do it.
Well, no, and I mean, you know how I feel about it. I mean, I certainly am, I don't know how many tears I really would have shed if it had been killed, but I do understand that it's not any sort of, procedural debate. It makes me sick listening to these freaks talk about it because of what you just said there. What is it, 145 people a day?
Yeah, if not more. 45,000 a year.
Yeah, and it's just sort of, that's the reality. And like you said, the demographics that it's affecting are like working people and, you know, people like me. I don't have health care insurance. You see what I'm saying? It's across the board.
Right.
And people are losing it left and right because it's tied to jobs, you know?
And I saw a chart the other day that showed how much the employee portion, the employee contribution toward healthcare has risen over the last 10 years. And dear God, it's sickening. And there's no other reason for it. You know, the right wing, Sandra, can holler tort reform, it's some terrible trial lawyers, all they want to, but the facts are the facts. This is profit taking.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and the only worry that I have about them passing whatever the hell they are trying to pass is if, you know, the sort of amount of money that's going to be shifted to the insurers, it's just going to strengthen them in the long run, too, though. I mean, I can't get, you know, it's hard for me not to shake that argument. But it's still, on balance, I would prefer people to be saved. And what's going to kick in immediately, though? Anything?
There are elements of it that do kick in fairly quickly. I think if it's still in there, and I've had a hard time following and finding out, just because the information trail is so damn convoluted.
No, I was the Medicaid
buy-in, the money for the regional healthcare, the rural healthcare centers, you know, the Bernie Sanders stuff.
Yeah.
I think that begins to flow sooner rather than later.
Yeah, no, I just, you know, because 2014 pops in my mind. I'm like, you know, only the Democrats would craft something that, you know, takes a half a decade to get going. You know what I mean?
I do. And the thing that drives me craziest out of this, and another thing that sort of pushed me in the direction I wound up going in, is the fact that, well, if this thing doesn't happen, Sandra, in a generation when we start talking about it again, it will be even, you know, it's worse now than it was in 1994. And in a generation, it'll be worse by exponentially than what it is now. Each instance, we will be beginning at zero or less than zero. If this thing passes, there is something to work with and something to work on.
No, I understand, but if they don't address some of the sort of, I hate to bring this word up again, but monopolistic aspects of the insurance system, it is going to be made stronger. Like the antitrust aspect, that has to be dealt with. States need to have more power to control their own destiny. And I don't mean no across state line
portability BS. No.
Bottom. No, because we know where that would lead. That was the race to the bottom. But I mean that they can decide that they want to do single payer or buy-ins.
And you know the thing that's sort of lurking out in the weeds with all the state-based stuff is that nobody, and this includes, to be entirely fair, nobody, including Congressman Kucinich, has come up with a full working solution short of Medicare for All for ERISA. Because that is a real, that's a real stick in the spokes for every state-based solution, with the exception possibly of Medicaid. And you know, that's something that has begun to sort of rattle around my mind. And that is that if this Medicaid buy-in gets through, and it may not, it may already be gone. I'm pleading ignorance at this point.
Yeah.
But it wasn't already gone when we were in D.C. In January.
Right.
It was still in contemplation. If this Medicaid buy-in goes through, then that is a profound step toward, and I'm pretty sure you can get your head around this, that in its own right is a profound step toward a public option.
Yeah, the thing is, though, and it really makes me angry just even having this conversation with you, is that how little we do know about what's coming. That's not good. That is not good for us. It's not good for the Democratic Party, once again, to be, you know, trying to run on some vague whatever. You know what I mean by that? They never have anything that can be explained.
And you know what? That's not necessarily, I think you'll agree with me, that's not necessarily a function of the legislation itself. That is a function, and it's a part of the debate, and not even debate, but the overall just general dadgum gripe of the failure of Democratic messaging.
But that's what I'm saying. No, and it's just, it's stunning, because we should, and especially people like us who actually pay attention to this stuff, I shouldn't have to be spending 2 hours on the internet trying to piece together what I can from the actual text that I found online.
Agreed.
Okay, because I'm a goddamn political science major, so you know what?
And a bit of a political junkie into the bargain.
And it's like, what the hell? So if I can't come up with nothing, how am I supposed to expect, you know, my family members and just people who are concerned to know exactly what Obama is going on about all over the country at the moment? You know what I mean? It's just so bizarre.
Well, okay, you want to get bizarre-er? You want, I mean, this, because this is even more bizarre. David in South Carolina just sent this along to me. Are you familiar with Representative John Shadegg from Arizona, Republican? Well, this guy is no moderate Republican, no liberal Republican, to the extent they're even allowed to continue to exist. He talked to David Schuster after Kucinich's... Pardon?
The media person?
Yes. He talked to David Schuster after Kucinich's announcement and implied that that Kucinich only agreed to vote yes after having his arm broken. You know, I love the imagery that these right-wingers use, because they, you know, they can't do anything without engaging in some sort of violent or eliminationist imagery. But then he went on, and this is where it gets bizarre, because this guy is a, you know, sure enough, right-wing freak. And he said as follows: the reality is this bill is going to reward for-profit insurance companies that have done a disservice. This bill is going to give them exactly what they wanted. The insurance industry, the for-profit insurance industry, wanted an individual mandate, and that's what they're getting out of this bill. The for-profit insurance industry did not want a public option because they don't like competition, and guess what? They're getting that. So Schuster then confronted him and accused him of supporting the insurers, and all of a sudden Shadegg backed off, and he said, no, we don't, you know, support insurers. You guys keep saying that, but I'm not the guy pushing the bill that says we should compel people to buy insurance from the for-profit guys. That's the Democrats. And so he goes back and forth with Schuster a little bit more, and he says, I would support single payer. And Schuster, just to make sure that he was getting it right, that, you know, somebody hadn't put something in the Kool-Aid, says, you would support a government-run medical system? And Shadegg says, absolutely. I would support forcing American insurance companies to compete. Right now they have a monopoly. And then he goes on and says, the best way to pay for those with pre-existing conditions is to spread their costs among the healthy, among the taxpayers.
What?
Right. Now, I personally think this is more of the frankly, this is a little Jedi stuff.
But you know, no, this is the Democrats about to get effed. That's what that is. If they don't have any kind of way to come back at some comment like that, because I'm sitting here listening to you shake my head, yep, damn Skippy, that's what it is. And you're telling me it's some freak from Arizona?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. And the mess, you know, how are the Democrats going to counter messages like that when they can't even explain to you and I what the hell they're trying to pass in a quick minute?
Well, and when they're not even getting out there, and I mean, look, for me to use myself as some sort of comparison benchmark is probably unfair because they don't even know I exist except for the fact that I show up and castigate them about mountaintop removal once a year. But the
don't
fact
tell yourself short.
Well, but no, I mean, no, the Ed Schultz, they know. Rachel Maddow, they know. Keith Olbermann, they know. Tom Hartman, they know. Me, I'm nothing. But the fact of the matter is, I get the same press release as everybody else gets, okay? And there's a lot of press releases, Sandra, about how, you know, we need to push for it, and we need to make the argument in favor of, and I can bring you guests who can speak in favor of, and yada, yada, yada. But there's not a lot of information out there just explaining it.
Right.
Bullet-pointing it.
No, it's incredible, and it is the death knell for major legislation, especially social legislation like this. I mean, why don't they crack a history book open or something? I mean, it's just incredible. And I think that's going to be a huge problem, almost as big a problem as these idiots going on about we don't have the vote for a public option and saying we got to accept this mandated madness that's coming. And they're going to be run against.
Well, I've got a legitimate question here. I don't personally think that this bill precludes later legislation that would provide a public option. Do you?
Well, once again, yeah, I suppose if we're kind of in a vacuum, but I have a hard time not imagining that the insurance companies are just going to build on the parts of the legislation that makes them even more dominant. That's my fear. Because it seems so difficult.
You know, and I ask because, you know, we spent 4, 5, 6 months talking about triggers.
Oh, God.
You know, first it was single payers off the table. Then it was, well, okay, could we have a public option, please? And I don't think you can have a public option. And then it was, well, what if we had a public option with a trigger? And so we spent, we wasted countless days and, frankly, lives talking about that. And so, you know, that's all gone from the bill. And I guess the question is, the Congress wants to do health care, and then I'm told that, we're going to do health care, we're going to get that signed into law, and then we're going to start on energy.
Yeah, and they're going to back away from this thing they passed so quickly it's going to make our heads spin, which makes me really worried, though, Bob. You see what I'm saying? Because, you know, we're going to be left to the tender mercies of, you know, these horrific...
Well Point.
Yeah, Well Point with the backing of the IRS. I mean, I'm just sort of... It's kind of freaky, the mandate part, because, of course, they're not talking much about that. Why would they? You know what I mean?
Right. And to be fair to Barack Obama, he didn't start out a Band-Aid guy. I mean, if you follow him all the way back to the Illinois legislature, he was a single payer guy.
Well, not only that, but he also criticized the mandate when Hillary Clinton was
precisely
it. And it's sort of so you know, but once again, I don't know if that just compromising on his part or doing the possible or whatever kind of
I know.
Well, no, but this is like Obama. I guess he's out there trying to, and he got Dennis Kucinich to.
Now they still haven't got Ms. Kilroy. I don't know if you saw that. She's another Ohio rep, Democrat, and she is a declared fence sitter. And they, today, Sandra, there was there were competing rallies outside her office in where the hell is it, Ohio? And I'm sorry, that makes me sound like a real jackass, but I just don't know. It was at her district office, and I'm reading here and trying to find out. But anyway, there were competing rallies of, you know, your average birther, deather, bagger, tenther, booger eaters. And then on the other side, there were people who want the health care bill passed. And at one point, and this is just, I should stop being shocked, Sandra, by what the right wing does, the white wing, let's face it. But I should stop being shocked, but somehow every time I think, you know, I'm all jaded up and I can't be shocked anymore, every time, you know, Rush Limbaugh jiggles in his chair mocking Michael J. Fox, they come up with something else. And that's what happened today. Lo and behold, these competing rallies, outside, Representative Mary Jo Kilroy's office. A man sat down in front of the birther, deather, bagger, tenther, booger eaters and said, look. And he had a sign that said, I have Parkinson's disease and I need help. The white wingers responded to him by calling him a communist. One of them came up and threw money at him. Another one said, if you're looking for a handout, you're in the wrong end of town.
Okay, well, you know, it just sort of, you know, it just gets back to another idea, which, you know, I don't really spout too much because it's not very nice. But the whole notion that, you know, maybe Americans are really just not that nice.
Maybe we're not. And, you know, we can add the corollary onto that, Sandra. Maybe we're not that bright.
Well, okay, well, no, there is, that I don't have no problems talking about because I'm inundated with it daily, you know, hourly, almost every minute if I'm not alone. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, see, if this was a more widely heard program, we would now be officially branded liberal elitists.
Oh, my God, but it's just, you know, but the meanness, though, you know, I'm just sort of thinking sometimes, you know, us liberals are just operating in the cloud.
And that's the whole thing. These are some mean bastards.
Mean. Because mean plus stupid is, yeah, that's hella frightening.
And the best part of all of this is that after this, and she had to be aware of it, some staffer or some such, Representative Kilroy released a statement, of course, and she thanked both sides for making their views known.
Oh, no, not that again.
And said, I will continue to rely on the voices of my constituents in making my final decision.
Oh, I mean, and see, I get back to what you were saying before, that it's a moral issue. And that sort of description you just gave, it just really scares me because you get sick. How is getting sick a handout or your fault? Please explain it to me.
Well, okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
Now, see, you thought you were being rhetorical, but you ought to know better by now.
Oh, my God.
No, explain that? I can explain it because, oh, dear. This is a function of, you know, you from time to time mention neoliberalism. I from time to time mention neo-Calvinism. This is the merger. This, the people, the white wingers are people who have been so thoroughly mesmerized and imbued with the principles of neo-Calvinism that they don't even think about it anymore. It's become part of their autonomic nervous system, all right? And as such, when they see a guy who says, I've got Parkinson's and I need help, they don't have to process it. They immediately make assumptions based on the neo-Calvinism that runs through their bloodstream along with their red and their white corpuscles. Okay? They see someone like that and they immediately process, God doesn't like this person because he wouldn't have Parkinson's if God did.
Yeah, no, no. It makes perfect sense, I'm sure.
To their way of thinking, it absolutely does.
That's what I'm saying. It's just,
but the problem is, down the road, all these healthy white wingers, when they get sick, they're going to have this moment of profound existential cognitive dissonance when they have to look up and, using that same processing mechanism, ask the question, when did God stop liking me? And that is a tough pill to swallow, Sandra.
Oh, no, it's just incredible. But, I mean, because there's no way you can make an argument if you're dealing with that mindset about anything.
No.
In the commons.
No. You cannot have, and maybe that's the takeaway from this. You can't have a rational conversation with a white winger. Okay? You just can't. If I'm going to fault anybody, if I'm going to be honest about all this, the guy with Parkinson's with the sign who went and sat down in front of them shouldn't have, because he was going to have he went over there, I guess, with the intent of having some sort of dialogue.
Well, no, but
no can do.
No, but it's because you, not only are you not supposed to ask for help, or need help, but they get angry at this whole process of bringing this to the forefront too. That's another thing I noticed, that this is making them angry just on the strength that it is, you know?
Yes.
And that is really disturbing to me too. I mean, healthcare is so personal. I mean, the whole thing is just really ugly. Because, anytime I talk to my foreign friends, they really are just stunned by the whole concept.
I see some of that, too, because, just leisure time activities, Sandra. I go to websites that have nothing to do with politics or culture or anything. You know, places where I can be absolutely non-political, or at least attempt to be. And even there, you know, you see it leaching out because one of these places, you know, there's the social corner, if you will. And there are all these expatriate Americans and foreigners who are watching the healthcare debate in this country. And without fail, they all say the same thing. Why is this even an issue? I can't believe that this is an issue. And, you know, we hear it in our own right from people who are overseas. Our Australian listening contingent and our Japan correspondent, Robert, who has made it abundantly clear over and over that the system there works fine. You know, we've got stunned Canadians and everybody's focused on the United States going, what is your problem? Why can't you figure this out? And I guess my part of that process, Sandra, is to say to that contingent of people, maybe you just don't understand what 30 years of total media dominance and total inculcation does to an otherwise reasonably decent people.
Well, and also, if you look at the history, I mean, you know, I'm sorry, I keep flashing back to our legacies in this country. I mean, they don't bode well for coming together. And maybe it's just that simple, you know, that it's too much to overcome. I mean, I don't, you know, I really don't want to come to that conclusion, but it's absurd what's going on. And, you know, I do fear for what's going to be passed, although I do think they probably will pass something.
I think they will, and I think And see, that's the thing. I don't think the debate is should they or shouldn't they. I think we all agree that something's got to be done. We would, you and I and the rest of the Horn family would like more to be done rather than less, and it looks like less is what we're getting. But none of us are able to just, and it's why we're progressive, why we're liberal, or whatever it is we call ourselves, it's why we are the way we are, that we look out there and we don't have any trouble, Sandra, imagining those 45,000 people who will be dead by this day next year if we don't.
Well, no, but it seems like it's easy for people here to compartmentalize stuff like that, you know?
Well, on the other side, absolutely.
And all sorts of issues, because, you know, I'm forever bashing my head against the wall over 2.3 million people locked up in this country. I'm forever like, what in the hell? You know, so there's different issues that are just sort of mind-boggling to me, you know, being American.
And it's that compartmentalization that gets us.
Yeah. No,
and that's why, you know, that's why I keep coming back to what I suppose is my primary brief, that our side don't get it.
Yeah,
that we don't understand that 2.3 million people behind bars, many of whom probably ought not to be, is not the disease, but a symptom of a larger one. Go ahead.
Oh, it's just another byproduct of the neoliberalism, actually.
Well, yeah.
And racism. It's like a combination.
Without a doubt. And it goes on and it extends. You know, the environmental problems, problems of gender equity, problems of sexual identity equity, problems of labor equity. You know, a lot of people use the word justice. I think equity is probably as good or better word, because it's not like anybody's looking to be elevated above somebody. We just want the playing field leveled. But the problem is we view all these problems as separate problems when they are all the same problem.
No, it's all connected, and what's really scary about the U.S. is how people will settle on the new equilibrium, you know? It doesn't matter how hideous it gets in this country, people figure out a way to, and then they just go on. And I'm always amazed by that. I'm like, dude, you know, you're now paying $5,000 a year for a state college. Okay. You know, that's real basic, but it can start from something like that, you know? And you just go on from there.
Yeah, I know, I know.
You know? I suppose this is a bit of a disjointed conversation.
No, I personally don't think so. But let me ask you one thing before you go. Email rolling in from your fellow Californian, Marty, and I'm not sure where he's going with this question. But he says, please ask my fellow Californian Sandra her view on State Senator Ashburn on the race for governor. Are you following any of that?
I'm not. I was too busy stuck on the fact that Meg Whitman is tied with Jerry Brown so far in the polls. I don't know about this other person.
He's the guy who got busted for DUI, you know, driving home from the gay bar.
Oh, okay.
And he was a big Proposition Hate supporter and everything. But then he had the common decency the next day to come out and say, you know, I am so gay. But I don't know anything about the governor business. Maybe Marty will have to enlighten us both.
Yeah, he will, because I have, that's a good one. Well, listen, I'll let you go, but I have to leave you with the Walmart telling black people to leave the store.
Oh, Jesus. is this new, or is that the on?
Okay, this is out of New Jersey. A male voice came over the public address system Sunday evening. Attention, Walmart customers, all black people leave the store now.
Dear God.
Anyway,
I can't wait to see the backgrounder on that one.
No, I'll send you the article. I'll send it over to you.
Oh, do please. Talk to you soon, Sandra.
All right, bye.
Bye now. And we'll roll along. It's about 21 minutes before the hour. And keep things going here. If you want to jump into the conversation radio is fine. 877-443-2366 is the number on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Good talking.
we tries real hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I was gonna call about that man with the Parkinson. I saw that on the news after they started talking to him and acting up. He just was sitting there not saying nothing, just looking sad.
Yeah.
But did you hear about the 12-year-old little boy that?
That the right wing's attacking now?
Yeah. Michelle Malkin or whatever, Rush and Beck, of course. I don't know how many others.
Yeah, the usual suspects.
And his mother died, and he's going around, you know, asking for health care to be passed with his grandmother, and they said, what did his grandmother do? It's just so nasty, Bob.
Yeah, Marcellus's mother died of pulmonary hypertension.
Yeah.
After she had lost her health insurance because she couldn't work anymore.
Right.
Marcellus Owens showed up at a March 11th press conference with Senate Democrats, talked about his mama's death.
Mm-hmm.
His mama was 27 years old when she died. She'd been an assistant manager at a Jack in the Box restaurant, you know, one of those people that the Bush administration tried to reclassify as a manufacturing job,
if you recall. Yeah, I remember.
and you know, so Glenn Beck attacks him.
Viciously.
Nasty. What did Flush Flimball do? He said, your mom would have still died because Obamacare doesn't kick in until 2014.
Yeah.
Now, this is unseemly, exploitative. An 11-year-old kid being forced to tell this story all over just to benefit the Democrat Party and Barack Obama. Your mama would have still died.
Yeah. And that Michelle, she's in it, too.
Oh, yeah, she was really disgusting.
They are a disgusting bunch.
Yeah, she referred to him as the new dubious poster boy for Demcare. And went on and say, she said the New York Times dropped the ball on writing about it because she said, the New York Times failed to mention that Owens's grandmother and family have been longtime activists for the left-wing single-payer advocates of the Washington Community Action Network, or that the boy and his grandmother traveled to Washington with sponsorship from the AstroTurf lobbyists of the Health Care for America Now outfit.
Oh, well.
Never mind that there's not a shred of evidence that any health insurer ever abused Marcellus. Never mind that the family has made no claim that Marcellus himself had survived without insurance. And Newsbusters got in on it. It just goes on and on and on. But, you know, why are we surprised? When I first saw the story come out, Juanita, that this young man had spoken up, I thought, dear God, that filthy crowd is going to do the same thing to him that they did to the young man who was talking about the need for the expansion of the CHIPS program. You remember when that happened?
Oh, yeah, they showed that.
When Michelle stalked him?
Yeah. Oh, my. I'm sorry. Those people are not human. They're demonic.
I got one for you here that might make you want to scream a little bit. Are you familiar with the organization? It's a front group for the insurance industry. It's called Americans for Prosperity. I have yet to figure out how you can be prosperous while you're being sick. But they've started running attack ads in Representative Kathy Dahlkemper's district. She's a Democrat from Pennsylvania, saying that that health care reform will lead to lower cancer survival rates. They're running the same ad in 17 other key districts through tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right. And they're saying things like, if government takes over health care, rationing by a government panel will cost you your life. Just listen to this, Juanita. It won't take long to crank it up here.
Okay.
You'll be astonished.
I was diagnosed with breast cancer when I was 43. My mother died of cancer, but early detection saved my life. Now a government panel that didn't include cancer specialists says women shouldn't receive mammograms until age 50. That saves money, but could cost your life. If I had followed the new government guidelines on mammograms, my cancer would have spread undetected, and my chances of survival would have been reduced. If government takes over health care, Recommendations like these could become the law for all kinds of diseases. If you find a lump, you could wait months for treatment, and life-saving drugs can be restricted. Europe already has government-run health care. Their five-year survival rate is just 79%. In the U.S., it's 90%. My odds of surviving cancer were high because my care was the best. What are your odds if the government takes over your health care?
We need to start over and get health care right.
Doesn't that just make you sick? And the sad thing is, Juanita, or not the sad thing, the thing to be expected, I suppose, Juanita, is that these are outright, I mean, this isn't, you know, fudging on the truth. This isn't, you know, bending the truth a little bit. These are outright lies. There's an organization out there called PolitiFact, and they gave it their pants on fire rating, which means it is an
liar, pants on fire.
Right, outright lying, not misleading, not mendacious, no, lying. And they say, in short, this is a bogus issue. Nothing in the health care bill would change how Mrs. Walsh or the 4 out of 5 Americans like her would have received care through employer insurance. More importantly, Americans for Prosperity seized on an issue, free mammograms for women between 40 and 50, that was specifically taken care of with not one but two Senate amendments. Okay, so there's that. But here's the really sick part. I mentioned to you, Juanita, that this ad has been run in Representative Kathy Dahlkemper's district, right? Well,
I'm not familiar with her, but
neither was I. But it turns out that Kathy Dahlkemper just got done in the last month burying both of her parents, both of whom died of cancer. And she responded, bless her heart, I'm proud of this. She responded and said, these attacks from a Washington-based front group are false, tasteless, and shameful. In the past month, I've lost both my parents to cancer. It's truly disgraceful for outside groups to then attack me for not being tough enough on cancer. Like millions of Americans, my family and I have lost loved ones to this horrible disease. This is personal for me. I've been a strong proponent of the Kansas Cancer Research Foundation and the work they're doing to find a cure, and I've encouraged more cancer screenings, particularly for women. My record and dedication are clear. But guess what? Americans for Prosperity doesn't care. They don't care. No, they don't care if they're lying, Juanita. They're refusing to pull the ad.
Well, you know, I tried to watch some of that stuff. They're talking in the House of Representatives, you know, like the minute speeches. They go back and forth from Republican to Democrat. And the Democrats, some of them are talking about something different. But they tell, the Republicans tell the same old lies no matter what is said. They tell them over and over and over again. And I know a lot of people don't believe there's a devil, but I'm going to tell you there's some evil in this world. And you know what Jesus said about the devil? And he likened the religious leaders of his day to them. He said he's a liar. The truth is not in him. He's a murderer from the beginning. And that's what these people are.
I was going to say, sounds like some people we know, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. And he called the religious leaders that. He said, you're of the your father, the devil. And they said, oh, we don't have any father except Abraham. He said, if your father was Abraham, then you would, you know, trust me. But they wanted to kill him because he came to heal the brokenhearted.
You know, and it all ties together with the whole, social justice thing and the Beck rant and all of that business. These people, at the end of the day, you know, it's like Bart Kopp said about priests abusing children. He said,
yeah,
they don't believe, you know, Bart's a very, very well-noted atheist. And Bart said, these priests don't believe in God any more than I do.
No.
But he said, the fact of the matter is, they maintain that veneer of belief.
Yeah.
So that so that they can do the things they do.
Yeah, that's, and, you know, that's commonplace, not just among the Catholics.
Oh, no. They've gotten the biggest light shone on them because,
yeah.
You know, they've got the whole priestly
phony
celibacy.
Money to pay out.
Right. But, yeah, there's plenty of stories out there about Baptists and Methodists and Lutherans
yeah.
and Presbyterians. But without fail, they are almost always from right-wing churches,
oh,
Juanita.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was going to this Baptist church, a small Baptist church, and they had a preacher there that, and he hired one of these guys, and I liked the guy. I liked him. And he would preach, you know. He was a better preacher than the preacher to me. Well, they hired him as assistant pastor. He wasn't there hardly 3 months before they found him inside the church doing his thing with one of the female congregationalists. And he was the most likable one of them.
Yeah, it's the old story of the preacher who gets his hands caught in the church secretary's drawers.
And then it just goes on and on and on. And they can't believe in God. They can't have any fear of God. I mean.
No, and, you know, again, going back to what
money,
Bart Kopp
money,
said.
Money.
Yeah, going back to what Bart Kopp said about the priests. He said, you know, they can't believe in God and be doing that to some little boy knowing that God is watching them.
And see, he says he's an atheist. To me, that's more God-like in debt than so-called believers.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, that's why I can look up and say, you know, A, it's not for me to judge. But if everybody out there in the faith that I was raised in is quite convinced that Jerry Falwell has gone to heaven, then I'm pretty sure that that's a heaven I don't want anything to do with. I mean, you want to be walking around on the clouds with the wings and the harp and the halo and just plucking your harp and have Jerry Falwell come up and put his arm around you and say, "Brother, it's good to see you. Hey, Sister Juanita, I'm so glad you're here." No.
And I would say, I don't think I went where I wanted to go to.
I tell you what, something you would enjoy immensely, and it's out there. All you have to do is search for it using the Google. Look for this sometime and just pass the time with a little bit of reading because you will be delighted. Look for a Mark Twain story called An Account of Captain Stormfield's Visit to Heaven.
Oh, God.
You will be, you will be charmed, Juanita, I promise you.
Well, that guy was something else, wasn't he?
Oh, he was a genius.
Yes. Tell me that again.
An Account of Captain Stormfield's Visit to Heaven. Let me see if I can find Sorry, I type loudly.
Did you ever read about some of the things he wrote about slavery?
Oh, yes. There it is. Okay, it was right up there at the top. In fact, I don't know. It's kind of long. I may have to make it into two nights of readings, but it might be worth doing the reading because anything that begins, well... When I had been dead about 30 years, I begun to get a little anxious. Mind you, I'd been whizzing through space all that time like a comet. Like a comet. Why, Peters, I laid over the lot of them. Of course, there weren't any of them going my way as a steady thing, you know, because they traveled in a long circle like the loop of a lasso, whereas I was pointed as straight as a dart for the hereafter. But I happened on one every now and then that was going my way for an hour or so, and then we had a bit of a brush together. It was generally pretty one-sided because I sailed by them the same as if they were standing still. Ordinary comet don't make more than about 200,000 miles a minute. Of course, when I come across one of that sort, like Encke's or Halley's comets, for instance, weren't anything but just like a flash and vanish, you see. Now, come on, you know that's just going to own you, right?
Yeah. I like his one about the war, too, about being in the church.
Yeah, the war prayer.
Yeah.
Can't be beat.
Yeah, that... Well, like I say, he was an amazing, brilliant man.
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt. But if you read this, I think it'll sort of speak to that issue of that issue of not wanting to be, you know, not wanting to share a heaven with Jerry Falwell.
No.
Of course, well, you know, he went on to say at one point, he said that if we got into heaven based on merit instead of salvation, our dogs would get in and we would wait outside.
Yeah, I read that. That's good. That's true, too.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, there was later on, there was a Twilight Zone episode that sort of reflected on that about an old country fella who had died and gone on walking down a path in the woods with his old dog Blue or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And he was enticed to come in a certain direction by a fella saying, yeah, come on in, come to your reward. And the dog wouldn't go. And it was the devil.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But no, you're absolutely right with these, you know, what else? I mean, you know, I try not to throw words like evil around.
I'm sorry, but I would just have come to believe that, you know, they've sold their souls.
Yeah. And I mean, we heard that one piece a minute ago. I hadn't run this yet, but you mentioned the thing in Ohio. This is not to be missed. Just to hear these freaks and what they do to this man who merely sits down and says, "I have Parkinson's and I need coverage."
Yeah.
It's as sick as can be.
Yeah.
And
one man was throwing dollars at him.
Right. Another one was calling him a communist.
The one guy was just leaning toward him and say, "You got to work for what you get. You don't get nothing for nothing. You don't get anything for nothing." And I think, you know, you may have to eat those words, man. And you probably will. And you know what? You were talking to Sandra about if we don't get some kind of medical help now, something doesn't change, about how worse it would be, you know, within the next 10 years. Well, actually, we just want the people like us, we won't have it.
Right.
There's no way. And the people that I hear that are paying for their insurance, you know, they're paying more than I ever made in a year.
Oh, without a doubt. And you know, what's important to note here is that, you know, we're talking about hypocrites, okay? We really are. And the Republicans can't have it both ways, Juanita. On the one hand, they hate poor people. They loathe, detest, and despise welfare.
Uh-huh.
And of course, that was part and parcel of Bill Clinton getting together with them to reform welfare back in 1995, if you recall that, 15 years ago. God knows how many people have died since then from that piece of rotten legislation.
Yeah. Well,
just to finish real quick, or just to sort of round out the thought, they hate welfare, right?
Yeah.
And the poorest of the poor are on Medicaid. And I mean, you've got to be pitiful dirt poor.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you have so much as an asset, if things happen for you where you've got a car or a house or something like that in which to live, you lose your Medicaid. And as a consequence, that incentivizes people to do everything in their power to avoid losing their Medicaid coverage.
Yeah.
Because then they're really in a mess.
Well,
if we pass some sort of reform that expands Medicaid, doesn't that actually encourage people to go out and get
and
work?
Right.
Because they've no longer got that sword hanging over their head that said, "Thou shalt not earn a dime lest thou lose thy Medicaid coverage."
Absolutely. And, well, you were talking about the welfare. That's one thing that I fear. They're talking about they're going to, you know, make it better once it gets passed. But that's what they said about welfare.
You know, our buddy...
Nothing was done ever, was it?
No, and our buddy News Ninja Gene says, "I've got a question. Are the right-wingers going to send away their disabled grandchildren?" And that's, you know, that's a fair question because... They can't get away, but they do. They ought not be able to get away with the things they get away with.
I know.
And they largely get away with them, Juanita, because the failed for-profit media allows them to.
Oh, I blame the media for 90% of what's going on.
Well, let me see if I can make this work. Let's check out this rally here.
At least 90%.
Let's check out this rally here and see what happens.
As Washington gears up for a vote on health care, the Olentangy River.
Okay, hold on.
Asphalt driveway separated the groups, but that didn't last for long.
You were saying something wrong.
I'm not talking to you, sir. This America, I can say anything I want. This
is right. See, that's a nice part. So can I.
That's right. I can say anything I want, whether it's right or wrong.
But I'm not interrupting you.
You interrupting me.
I said if it's healthcare
government. Name one thing Obama's done. One thing he's done. What has he done?
Listen to these white wingers.
At one point, a man whose sign said he had Parkinson's sat down in front of healthcare opponents.
If you're looking for a handout, you're in the wrong end of town. Nothing for free over here. You have to work for everything you get.
I'll pay for this guy. Here you go. Certified. I'll pay for you.
No, I'll decide when it gets money.
Yeah, this is a guy in khakis and a white shirt and a tie with sunglasses on throwing money at the stage.
No more handouts! Kill the bill! Kill the bill!
Kill the bill.
And that, you know, and the fact is, it's not kill the bill, it's kill the people.
Yeah,
they want to kill the bill. They want to kill people.
Yeah, that's right. You're right.
And you know, further proof of the sick eliminationism of the right wing comes from what's his name? Pence. This Pence creep.
I don't know him.
Mike Pence, Republican of Indiana. You know, he's got that white helmet hair. And he, you know, he's holier than that. You know, he's a real, real live, genuine Pharisee. And he's complaining about the fact that, you know, our side's beginning to complain a little bit too, that we're making as much noise, because they tried to have a teabagging rally, and hardly anybody showed up for it.
Yeah.
And so at one point,
you're talking about the one in Washington.
Yeah. And at one point, Michelle Bachmann chimed in, and she says, my guess is they'll probably be bringing in a lot of MoveOn.org people on Saturday to really beat the living tar out of them. That's my guess. So the more we get real people here, the better. Do you catch the implication, Juanita?
Oh, yeah.
People with MoveOn aren't real people.
Well, it was just like when you listen to them talk in Congress. All the mad people, they don't want this bill. Well, what they're talking about, they think that those teabaggers represent the real people, and I guess they do to them, because, like you said, they don't think anybody else is a real person.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, did you hear about her telling them, you know, not to pay the taxes?
Oh, the list is too long, Ronnie.
You don't have to pay them. I forget who I heard. They said, she go with them to the IRS to pay their taxes?
I know.
I can't believe those people, I'll tell you. But in a way I can. They're just getting worse and worse, Bob.
Well, look, it's the combination of what Sandra was talking about. They are mean.
Yeah.
And they're not very bright. That makes them perfect operatives for the white wing.
Well, like I said before, and you know, if these people are being used.
Sure they are.
That's,
but you know what? I have no sympathy because they are gladly being used.
Yeah. But just like, you know, they, the people of the, what lives at the family. They don't care about those people. They're the elite.
Yeah, oh, no, please. Yeah, exactly.
But they will use those people.
But you know what? You have sympathy for a sheep led to the slaughter within the the old metaphor. But you know what? These aren't sheep. These are mean-spirited, hateful, nasty people.
Yeah.
who don't give a rat's rear end about their fellow Americans,
right.
Don't care about the future. You know, they claim to be concerned about costs, but the fact of the matter is they were as quiet as church mice during the 8 years of the Bush administration.
Oh, because, yeah.
You know, there was a trustworthy Republican white man in the office, and he wouldn't do us wrong.
Well, you know they can't stand for a black man to be in office.
Oh, I know.
They cannot stand it.
Nope, can't abide it, not even a little bit. Well, Juanita, you've got things cooking along now. I mean, I got a bunch of lights lit up here, so I'm going to roll along and try to get to them. And dadgum.
I just wanted to say one thing.
Go right ahead.
That I've heard different ones say what's in the bill, and everybody says something different. So I guess just wait and see.
Well, and again, that goes back to messaging, and we're not doing it very well.
Oh, no, no.
Not at all.
Okay.
Juanita, have a wonderful evening,
and
I enjoyed it. Take care.
I did too.
Bye now. Calling from Central Florida, that's our buddy Juanita. Let's see. Let's roll on here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, praise be the possum goddess on this prayer meeting Wednesday.
Praise be the possum goddess. All hail. What's up, Reverbo?
Yeah, it's my birthday, too.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the horn critic at large and the most brilliant satirist on the internet share a birthday. How about that?
How about that? Yeah, I'm an excellent company, evidently. So.
And so is Eugene.
Well, you flatter me.
And I think you're similar. You are of very similar, if not identical, age.
Oh my! I was feeling really good before I called you, but that's what I say every time.
Yeah, well, see, that's my job.
It is your job. And it's also your job to, every now and then, you really nail something. And the reason I called tonight was because you were talking earlier about the good example, the way the neocons, or whatever you want to call them, the neoliberal, authoritarian, Calvinist.
Yeah, it gets to be a bit of a mouthful after a while, doesn't it?
It does. These are just people who don't like to share. Let's just.
Yeah, they're bad kindergartners.
Right. They don't like to they don't play well with others. But the way, what it really is, what underscores all their bullshit, is this weird twisted concept. I guess they get it from the smiting Jesus, the Jesus they worship, the one that no one else seems to.
Yeah, make. Supply side Jesus, like Al Franken wrote about.
That's great. But yeah, and that's the other, and then basically they just boil it down to you are morally beneath them, and so you don't deserve this. So, and that to me,
if you were supposed to have this, you would be wealthy enough to afford it, and the fact that you aren't, that you can't, and you aren't, means God doesn't like you. Go die.
Now, how do they get around that kind of sticky situation when one of them needs help?
Well, hey, look, you know, these are people who largely profess to be followers of the Prince of Peace. How do they get around that whole business where the Pharisees come to Jesus and say, Master, what is the greatest, you know, Rabbi, what is the greatest commandment? And Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart. And they say, okay, what's the second greatest one? And he says, love your neighbor as yourself. And see, the thing is, that doesn't exist. That's not in the Big Ten. That's not in the original Ten. And but he said it, and in their, you know, pantheon, he's the same as God. So God said, love your neighbor as yourself. Well, you know what? If you're lined up down the street outside Mary Kilroy's office screaming at people who need medical help, you're not loving your neighbor as yourself. And you're not a Christian.
You mean Jesus didn't say love your neighbor as yourself unless they're bad?
Right. Or love your neighbor as yourself unless you have a political difference with them. Now, that's not in there.
Or unless they're a different color than you. Or unless they don't make as much money than you. See, I just think, just recently, one of these things I subscribed to, I wish I could remember what it is. Great. Blog. There's been a census of how many millionaires there are in the United States at the moment, and there really are. I don't even know if there's 1,000. Right.
Right.
And Okay, that's a very few amount of people controlling. Okay, so 2% of the people control like 99% of the wealth. That is a problem for another evening. But these people don't care. They can fly to Switzerland and get that cancerous knob taken off the back of their neck. They don't give a shit about universal health care. They never will. They never did. They never will.
Well, they would have to be able to even see us first.
Well, that leaves a lot of people, the way I did the math, a whole hell of a lot of people that would benefit from such a life support system. Would you agree?
Texas Betsy, the official Jewish mother of the Horn, just wrote in to say, I'm not Christian, but I'm pretty sure that there's a part in there about where Jesus heals the sick and doesn't let them die. Yeah, she's right.
Well, this is appalling how distorted. I don't know what.
Someday I'm going to get a hold of the secret right-wing Bible. And I'm going to find that verse where the leper says, "Heal me, Lord." And Jesus says, "Get away from me. You're filthy. You're unclean. Go die. Quit looking to me for a handout." I mean, do these people not understand, Reverbo, that Jesus went around looking for a handout?
I mean, that's their mantra. They have this thing about you don't deserve a handout. It's like a handout. We're going to give away our wealth to people we hate. Well, not on your life. And that, to me, that just boils down, it just reduces all down to that.
But see, he was no sooner hung up on the cross than everything started unraveling. Because, for instance, if you go on and you read into the Pauline letters, the Acts and Romans and all of that stuff, you'll find out, you'll find that verse that really disturbs the supply side Christians, where Paul writes, "And we held all things in common," communism. But the early church met in people's houses. But you didn't just want the rabble walking into a perfectly nice house. And early on, there were better Christians, it's straight out of Animal Farm, all pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than other pigs. And so you had some people who would go up and take the communal meal, right up there with the well-to-do, and the great unwashed stayed back a little bit. The social stratification started out pretty quick, and it's not far from there to having a bishop. And the next thing you know, you're replicating inside the church the same nastiness that took place outside the church. And the next thing you know, you're using the church to magnify your hatreds for various and sundry groups that you despise. For instance, the Gnostics, the Albigensians, the Protestants. Everybody got a good slaughtering in there somewhere along the way. There's an old joke about a Dominican and a Jesuit who were sitting around talking one day, and they were talking about the differences in their orders. And the Dominican says, "Our order was created to confront the Albigensian heresy." And the Jesuit says, "So what? Our order was created to confront the Protestant heresy. What's the difference?" And the Dominican looks at the Jesuit and says, "Don't see any Albigensians running around now, do ya?"
No, you don't.
So, there you go, I guess.
I guess there you go. That's always
been one of my favorite.
If you find a copy of that particular Bible that the right wingers read, you should spend an entire evening just pulling out quotes from it.
Well, Betsy's reminding me, and I remember the story now. They are in fact working on a new and tolerable and palatable, if you will, conservative Bible. They really are.
I believe, now that you mentioned it, I do remember something like that. Yeah, they're very busy. They're busy in Texas rewriting textbooks, and they're busy rewriting Bibles. God, these people love to write, don't they?
I got to share something with you, because you'll appreciate it. I mentioned early in the program Mark Morford's new column out at sfgate.com, Dear Texas, Please Shut Up, Sincerely, History.
Yeah.
He says, hey, kids, here's something I bet you didn't know. Black people, back in 1800 or whenever, they liked being slaves. True. Many savvy, industrious Negroes actually volunteered for that fine, desirable position. It was a completely balanced, fair, hugely successful system until those damn liberals came along and ruined everything. I know, right? What a shame. You know what else? America was wholly victorious in Vietnam. It's a fact. Kicked some serious enemy butt. Mission accomplished. Sure, it was a little bumpy for a while, but President Nixon, that great and wronged American hero, put us on the righteous path in the end, wrapped that sucker up beautifully, and made America the noble Superman of the world. Hey, it's the truth. You can look it up in your history textbook. Even more good, newly historic news. Despite what you may have heard from the liberal media, America has very much won its recent God-sanctioned war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Angry Allah loses again. Just look at this handy diagram on page 281, figure 4-9. See those little dark-skinned bodies stacked up neatly beside that minaret? Right next to that completely unstaged photo of the toppled Saddam statue? Look how many there are. Graphs never lie. He's brilliant.
It is more.
Did you know back in the frontier days that Native Americans welcomed the white man with open arms? Absolutely true. Those poor sunburned people were so beaten down and exploited by their oppressive dictator chiefs, they were forced to believe in all sorts of disgusting pagan sun gods and had to eat like rocks and snakes and stuff. It's no wonder they greeted proud, fair-minded American colonials as great liberators. Yes, just like in Baghdad, and happily gave us free access to their fields and their women and their wonderful bead-making technology in exchange for, you know, gin and fireworks and casinos.
Women.
Wonderful bead-making technology.
It really is. I mean, just think of how far where we come because of that. Got it. You know, you probably remember the Firestein Theater and of many, many wonderful albums. They have an album called, some years ago, called Everything You Know Is Wrong. And basically the theme of it is just this. You know, I'll bet you didn't know, yeah, that, the Aztecs, just, they telephoned Cortez to come over. You know,
yeah,
they,
exactly. Everything you knew was wrong.
Find it. It's a wonderful album. Because it is true. We've just been living in a daze, in a liberal dream. We had no idea. Richard Nixon, you know how he won that war with a secret plan that he didn't tell anybody about.
And never told us.
And never really told him. Yeah, never told him. I wonder if Henry Kissinger knew about that.
Henry Kissinger gave him the plan in the first place.
I'm just flat sick of hearing these excuses about how we don't want to share, because I think it comes down to this just perverted, this self-righteous crap from them. Like, it's your punishment. It is God's punishment, right, to poor women for being sexy or for getting pregnant. That's why we don't want to give them abortions. It has nothing to do with whether or not we think it's murdering human beings or not.
No.
It's punishment.
Well, right, you know, because women are like dirty, you know.
Well, yeah, and if you don't make enough money and you can't eat, well, that must be God's punishment too, I guess. Well, you don't expect that, you know.
Well, that's just proof that you never picked yourself up by your own bootstraps, Pilgrim.
Yeah. Went to the boot store, though, was closed. You said that the other night.
Yeah. Bootstrap store closed. Bootstrap factory moved to China. Yeah, Kate just dropped a note in talking about, and the, you know, when I said about the, you know, the rabble had to sort of hold back in the back of the house in the early church. She said, and then the rabble held back and went to Grandma's house for some kick-ass fried chicken while the bougie up in the front ate something else. Traveling preachers always got the best food first, though. And that's the truth. I mean, I am distantly related to one of the greatest slavery apologists, the circuit riders of Western Virginia. And the fact of the matter is, the man was genetically, he had a genetic ability. He could smell chicken frying from 50 miles away.
Damn.
Yeah. Sam Black. You know, there's a certain irony in the fact that the guy was rabidly pro-slavery and his last name's Black.
There it is. And plus, I'm not sure I would want to be, I'd want that as one of my gifts, to be able to smell fried chicken from that far away. It might drive you crazy.
Yeah, but it's sort of like, I don't know, it's sort of like a 19th century GPS.
I said, well, no, the chicken has always come from the West, it would be. But, here, I found this thing real quick before I let you go. This is on that blog called, or that online magazine called Too Much, which is wonderful. I don't know, I may have sent you that link months and months ago. But here they're talking about the new tally of U.S. millionaire households. Now, remember, and I have to put this in, I have nothing against making money, and I have nothing against entrepreneurism, and I have nothing. I wish I was rich. But what I have a problem with is getting rich while impoverishing me.
Yeah, right.
Big problem with that. But anyway.
Yeah, you know, I espouse the Daffy Duck approach. I don't need to be rich. I just want to be comfortably well off.
There you go. And so you clearly, no one needs billions of dollars to do that. You can buy plenty of Ferraris with just millions. Anyway, here we go. The new tally of U.S. millionaire households. This is from a Chicago consulting group that are worth at least, worth at least a million. That jumped 16% in 2009. I wonder how they jumped up and we sank. I don't know that. But here we're going to get to a number here. The number worth at least 5 million was up 17%. My figure was way off. Some 980,000 U.S. households ended last year worth over $5 million.
Wow.
Wow.
And the rich, what did my dad always tell me about the Republican Party? Their goal is for the rich to get richer and the poor to get poorer?
Pretty much. So we have about a million worth $5 million or more.
You know, for a group that's so virulently opposed to wealth transfer, they're getting some pretty good wealth transfer in there.
Oh, I'd say so. And again, they, you know, I don't just before we start examining who they are and how they got wealthy, you know, I say great, that's the idea. But I think there's something going on. So anyway.
Yeah, I think you may be right.
But think about the numbers, though. If you just take,
you know, it's kind of like it, right, and that's what I'm getting at, Reverbo. If you want to make a lemming skin coat, it's going to take a lot of lemmings.
Exactly.
You know, if you want to have hummingbird tongue canapes, it's going to take a lot of hummingbirds.
It is.
And in order to transfer the kind of wealth you just described upward to further enrich the already rich, that takes a boatload of poor people.
Well, it does, and it takes a really...
And you got to make, and here's the fun part, you got to make some new poor people.
Well,
in other words, you got to take people who you know, had houses and decent little middle-class lives, and you've got to demote them down into lower class.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Because you've already picked clean the bottom. Now you got to keep working your way up the ladder here.
Kind of breathtaking, isn't it?
I guess, except it's so easy to fix by just having tax rates fix all of this.
You know, I just wonder what, I can't help it, Reverbo, because I'm the kind of person I am. What would happen to this country if we, honest to God, went back to Richard Nixon's marginal tax rates? What would happen if we went back to Eisenhower's marginal tax rates?
You mean where the incentive is to put your profits back into your company and hire more people and make more buy more equipment and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, among other things, yes.
Instead of buying more yachts, that kind of world?
Well, more along the lines of, you know, of the manifestation of the philosophical principle that for those to whom much has been given, much will be asked.
Noblesse oblige, sort of.
Yeah, kind of. then, you know, what would this country look like? What would happen? Well, shoot, we'd have to build all the factories from the ground up again because we literally moved, we moved the sheet metal, we moved the corrugated metal walls to China. I mean, we moved it all to China. You know, somewhere in China there is, I kid you not, somewhere in China there is a silicon furnace that my father spent a big portion of his life working in and around. It's in China somewhere. I mean, they took it apart down to the last brick, sold it, and moved it to China.
Sweet.
And I'm sure somewhere out there, there's a lawyer who's running around shaking people down for counterfeit silicon that was made on the third shift. You know, that story's still rattling around my head from last night. That just blows my mind. You know,
that was so good and so fast that I ordinarily would be laughing at that, but you just got that out so effortlessly that that was excellent.
You know, they create the problem, and then they go and they shake down people who had nothing to do with the creation of the problem for the problem that they created. What a racket!
The third shift joke that I referenced, that I just whizzed right over my head. Hey, real quick, and you can't do this quick, but I just, the other day, someone was on the radio somewhere, somebody was talking about John L. Lewis. Is John L. Lewis your dad and all his friends' hero?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Now, John L. Lewis had his dark side, without a doubt. But yeah, he was past hero. I think it was Sam Huff, the great former WVU linebacker who went on to play for the Giants. Sam Huff said, growing up in West Virginia, every home had two photographs on the wall: Jesus Christ and John L. Lewis.
Didn't even make it, huh?
No.
All right, that's what I thought, but I'll have to go do a little research on Lewis. It's a name from the past, and I had a feeling that he was.
Well, just look up eyebrows, and it'll say C. Lewis John L.
I thought it would say.
I mean, he had eyebrows like that character out of the Dune movie, right? I mean, oh my God.
I thought if you look up eyebrows, it says C. David Ferry. No.
Well, that too. Also see Rooney Andy.
Yeah. And see you and I in about 30 years.
Oh, well, you know, that's what happens when the hair on the top of a man's head stops growing. It starts growing out of his ears and out of his eyebrows. You know, I was just, I don't mean to be a little bit gross, but I was just sitting here working one day. Agnes slipped up on me and I went, ow! And she went, what did you do? And she just told us, look at what was coming out of your head. I said, it was my head. I can't spare it. And she said, no, your eyebrows, dummy.
Yep, not as sexy as you think.
No, not even a little.
All right. I'm going to let you go.
Happy birthday, Reverbo.
Thank you, sir. Make it personal, as always.
You too. Bye now.
So long.
That is our critic at large, Reverbo. And I tell you what, we are at 28 minutes past 8 o'clock here on the East Coast. I want to make sure that I share something with you, because it is St. Patrick's Day, and this was just such an engaging, doggone story, I kind of have to. Editorial in today's New York Times titled San Patricio. It starts out, on this day of all days in the Irish-American calendar, when ethnic pride swells, let's raise a toast. Here's to the Irish, and here's to the rest of us. May we never forget where we came from. Nearly all of us were Mexicans once. That is, the new immigrants, poor and reviled, propelled by hope and hunger into America's prickly embrace. And they go on to describe a new album out called San Patricio. It's an album out made in collaboration between Patty Maloney of the Chieftains and Ry Cooder, in conjunction with a very well-known band from Mexico called Los Tigres de la Norte. del Norte, Los Tigres del Norte. And it commemorates something that I think is appropriate for St. Patrick's Day. And that is they have unearthed, and this is about as an odd a St. Patrick's Day song as you're ever going to hear in terms of the traditional St. Patrick's Day fair. But they note that during the Mexican-American War in 1846, a group of Irish immigrant conscripts facing discrimination deserted the United States Army. And when they did that, well, they went over to the other side. In fact, they were formed as the San Patricio Battalion under Mexican leadership. They fought bravely for the Mexican people with whom they shared a common religion and cultural experience. To the Americans, they were traitors, but to the Mexicans, they were heroes, and they remain remembered to this day. They were subsequently captured by the American military, and they were summarily executed. And this song is commemorative of that, Canción Mixteca. Enjoy. Fascinating story, the San Patricio Brigade, and the new album's out by the Chieftains featuring Ry Cooter, became available on March the 9th. Can you imagine just getting off the boat from Ireland being told to go and fight for your country and getting your butt shipped all the way down to Mexico. And then getting executed. But you know, it's so good to know that those people that we so quickly executed remain A, remembered in Mexican culture, and B, remembered as heroes. You know what? That's something I have to do. I have got to get better on my history surrounding the Mexican War. Because up until the Iraq War, it was the single most disgusting piece of war for war's sake in which the United States had ever engaged. Even Abraham Lincoln denounced it roundly. But imagine these Irish immigrants compelled to go and fight, figured things out that young Bobby Lee and young Ulysses Grant and young Albert Sidney Johnston and that whole crowd that would go on to be such famous purveyors of the Civil War couldn't. That what was going on in Mexico was dead ass wrong. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, hey, Bob, isn't it ironic that the Texas School Book Commission has removed the contribution of Tejanos in the war for Texas independence while the Mexicans honor the Irish? I don't know if it's irony or not, Ron. It might just be part of that general problem that I think we've identified this evening of Americans having a mean, stupid streak. You know, I go back to Mark Morford's column when he says, never doubt America's irrefutable greatness, kids. Our prison system, for example, is the finest in the world. Also, dirty Mexican people had no role whatsoever in the Civil War or U.S. history except as troublesome immigrants. Yuck. Hip-hop music is in no way, shape, or form to be considered a significant cultural movement, unlike totally awesome country and Western, and the war on drugs is going spectacularly well thanks to our fine military, numerous after-school specials, and the deep love of Jesus, who, if you look really closely at those old photographs from the Bible, is clearly wearing a U.S. flag pin on his robes to go along with his friendly, completely legal sidearm. God bless America. These irrefutable facts, and many more just like them, are brought to you by the Texas State Board of Education. Packed like a jug of rancid tartar sauce with intellectually numb simpletons who smell like ignorance and taste like fear. The TSBE. We make revisionist brainwashing fun. Maybe you didn't hear the little item about how a small pod of pale ultra-conservatives in Texas has just demanded a whole slew of specific changes be made to history textbooks down in the Lone Star State? About how, in fact, nearly every change is a rather ridiculous rewriting of history and the language surrounding it, all tending to favor, can you guess, white privileged capitalist males, a bitter Christian God, and a whitewashed version of history that never actually existed? Not much shocking about it at all, really. Texas education has never exactly equated with intellectual range and nuance. But there's a big ugly snag. Due to the state's huge purchasing power, the decisions of these tiny-brained ultra-conservatives could well influence what goes into various school history textbooks nationwide. So it is that some inbred neocon beliefs about homophobic God and gun-loving country will ooze their way into the minds of unsuspecting youth in a completely different state, say, 10 years hence, like a poison slowly leaching into the cultural water supply. Ah, Texas conservatism, it's the new DDT. What, too harsh? I'm not so sure. Yes, everyone knows that history is slippery and spurious to begin with, all about context and spin and who's telling the tale. History is, after all, written by the victors. What they don't usually add is how history is then revised by the politicians, gutted by the church leaders, molested by the power mongers, skinned alive by paranoid militants, poorly codified by the speechwriters, and then spun, torqued, and diluted by countless mealy experts before being shoved down the gullet of unsuspecting youth, where it is partially digested like so much liquefied school lunch meat, only to be wrongly half-remembered later in life by the most insane among them, who then quickly gets his own talk show on Fox News, and lo, the circle of life continues. Say what you will about standardized testing, draconian teachers' unions, lazy tenured teachers, crumbling campuses, slashed budgets, et al. I can think of no better argument for mortgaging everything you own so as to afford a private charter school for your kid than the disturbing fact that these Texas State Board mongrels might have any power whatsoever to shape young minds by way of further tainting the already wobbly, spurious historical record. Maybe it doesn't really matter. After all, it's widely understood that given the state of public education, children don't really learn much in school anyway. The system is so problematic and the teachers' union so dangerously obstinate, there's a good chance your kid will never crack open one of those flawed, historically inaccurate textbooks in the first place. Small consolation indeed. It's not all dire and brimstone. Prior to this ridiculous move, and by the way, the board's revisions still have to be ratified, so there's a slim chance public outcry and a deep sense of shame at their own repellent personal politics will get them to back off. There's apparently been a small amount of improvement in school textbooks over the years. From what I understand, in the wake of wildly influential bestsellers like Lies My Teacher Told Me and the late, great Howard Zinn's People's History series, among many others, school textbooks underwent some significant improvements in the past couple of decades. Slightly more multicultural and inclusive, balanced, realistic, not nearly as thin, lopsided, sexist, jingoistic, myopic as they used to be. Is that damning with faint praise? Maybe. Alas, if California weren't so utterly broke, slashing education budgets and shutting down schools, maybe our fair state could launch a counterattack, demand some reasonably accurate historic revisions in those self-same texts. Time was when we had some killer purchasing power of our own, remember? Yeah, me neither. Sadly, from what I hear, California schools don't even use textbooks anymore, or classrooms, or desks. They all disintegrated sometime back in 1987. History is now taught by means of sock puppets, toothpick dioramas, and firecrackers. And gin. Of course, I'm completely exaggerating. The changes the Texas Board is shoving through are probably relatively innocuous. Just another toxic chemical added to the already lethal school lunch menu. One of a thousand, really. I'm sure everything will be fine. Kids won't mind a whit that they're being fed heavily processed, dangerous, non-nutritive mental crap. Hell, they'll probably enjoy it, you know, just like all those happy, contented slaves. You know, and the fact of the matter is, what makes all this Texas textbook BS all the worse, it makes it easier for the ugly right, the white wingers, to scream about leftist colleges when little Eric and Laura go to college and are hit with, you know, a few facts. My children are telling me the colleges are rewriting the history they learned in Texas. I remember that study the Southern Baptist commissioned a few years ago where they found out that all that had to happen is a good Southern Baptist child goes off to college and they never come back to the Southern Baptist church ever. You ever wonder why? Yeah, I know. Me neither. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey.
Hey. It's Fancy.
I thought it was. How are you?
And I'll go quickly. Incidentally, there's a really good article. And this, we're talking, you know, I'm a Texan, honey, and I still have a lot of affinity there. About 3 years ago, Mother Jones ran a really good piece on the showdown at Baylor University where the question was, are we going to be a university that teaches science, or are we going to be a church institution that teaches intelligent design? And it was not a gentle battle.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
What they ultimately did was turn it into a secular school. And Baylor's always been a good college.
Yeah,
You sound good.
Thank you.
Yeah, the work you did, really.
Nice. John Fox was did some just Herculean stuff with all of this. I just did as I was told.
Now, I don't know. I've got a note here that it's just time to talk about this again. And that's Avon Cosmetics. And 11 years ago, I ran into a friend who said, when's the last time you had a mammogram? And I said, oh, about 10 years ago, because I don't have insurance. And she said, well, you know, Avon sponsors a screening. And I went. And not only did they sponsor a screening here, but I think of the first 400, about 460 of us that went through the first screening, two of us were diagnosed with cancer. And Avon paid for my hospital. And I got a surgeon through the St. Elizabeth Clinic here. You know, so I'm one breast short of a pair and incredibly grateful for that. So if you know women who haven't had a breast screening and don't have insurance, check through Avon.
Okay.
This is a really, you know, I'm talking to you today. I'm alive today because of Avon Cosmetics, and bless them.
Indeed. I had no idea.
I think we talked about once that I was, you know, one short of a pair. But now, are you having another grandchild?
Yes.
Yeah, your Liza and my Aaron are about a few weeks apart.
Okay.
And my next one is expected the end of July.
Well, we're hoping to keep this one in place through, like, the end of April. I don't know if that's going to happen.
I am so fortunate with this one. This is the unexpected one. You know, my son who does the science fiction recordings, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Who lives in Leipzig. So they're calling the baby. They saw the sonogram. It looks like a potato.
They're not calling the baby Kartoffel.
Well, no, they're calling the baby. Yeah, they are. They're calling the baby Potato. But at this point, we don't know if it's a girl potato or a boy potato.
Well, you know the old story about red potato and Idaho potato and their lovely
and a commentator.
Yeah, their lovely little daughter Sweet Tater that wanted to run off with wanted to run off with Sean Hannity.
Well, when I was a kid, it was.
Walter Cronkite.
Walter Cronkite, yeah.
Yeah, little Sweet Tater wanted to run off with Sean Hannity, and the parents were aghast, and Idaho Tater and Red Tater looked at Sweet Tater and said, honey, you can't marry him. He's just a commentator.
You truly need. I also have a story I'll call you back on after the show, but I'm so excited with this one because it's a German potato.
Yes, it's a Kartoffel.
It is. And under German medical care, it's fabulous.
Oh, I'm sure it's absolutely, it's as easy as human birth can be.
She is getting the best possible. Oh, it's amazing the care this woman's getting. And I think I've told you in the past, we lost her sister to cancer, but they did keep her going a very long time. And one of the things they do in Germany is if you can't get the treatment you need there, they'll send you someplace else. So ultimately, she was at a spa that was a spa slash hospice. And not only, you know, did they pay for her, but her husband and her 18-year-old went with her.
My God, how humane.
Yeah, which leads me to listen to that thing I sent you about Lawrence O'Donnell taking Rush to the Shed.
I saw that, yeah. I just... For some reason, it wouldn't load for me this evening. Maybe I'm having bandwidth problems. I don't know.
Oh, okay. He's quite good with that. That's worth a little show and tell tomorrow. It hit me what I haven't been hearing. And what I have been hearing is people telling the stories of how they have practiced their Christian goodness by taking in that brother or sister or whatever, who lost their job and who couldn't pay for their medical care. And how grateful they were that, yeah, they had to give up vacation and sending their kids to college and, you know, that the kids are now in community college and vacation is Saturdays in the park.
Right.
But they're so grateful because this precious relative needed them and they were able to come forward and gratefully as bond as a family and come through this hard time and, you know, the joys of caring for a sick member that's been ostracized by society. Have you heard any tale? Now, granted, I live under a log, but Have you heard any tales of this?
No, but I know they're out there. But again, Fancy, that is further proof of the failings in messaging. I hate that word, messaging. But the failure of us to deliver a coherent message. And you know what? We've been trained not to even try, Fancy. You know, look what was done to this young 11, 12-year-old boy. You know, they are
is
so...
Is that an obscenity?
Yeah, it is. It is absolutely, you know, I guess it was Potter Stewart, the late great justice, who said, I don't know what obscenity is, but I can tell you when I see it. Well, I agree with him, and I see this, and it is obscene. These attacks levied at an 11-year-old child who lost his mama.
And pretty much what you're hearing from these folks is suck it up.
Right. And so, you know, our side may not want to tell its stories. I know personally stories that I'm not at liberty to divulge. Because we don't, for a variety of reasons, we don't tell them.
Yeah.
And you know, they wanted the other side wants to be the Christians, but frankly, Fancy, the real model of Christian reticence is manifested in that unwillingness to share those tales. And it's frustrating as hell, because that's the only way the American people learn, is when they have to be confronted with the end product of their own manifest evil or at worst, malign neglect. Sorry, didn't need to yell.
No. We need that from time to time.
The stories are there. You know, there are a million stories in the Naked City. Yeah, there really are.
Yeah. And
we won't tell them. I mean, I don't know how to begin to tell the stories of people who have been ruined by an unlooked-for medical crisis. People who have been absolutely devastated. And I know these stories personally.
It's an amazing thing. I raised two kids without it, you know. As I said, life has its ants and its grasshoppers, and I'm a grasshopper. And ran away from home at the tender age of 35 with two small children in tow and managed to get them raised, and we've had a lot of fun. But there were a lot of periods in there with no insurance.
And all you could do was sit there and sort of hold your breath and cross your fingers and knock wood and not walk under ladders.
Absolutely terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. You know, somebody coughs and you think, just don't let it get mad. Just whatever.
Yeah.
And we managed to get them grown and okie dokie, but we were lucky. And not everyone. On the other end, somebody offered me a motorbike. My tongue was hanging out. You know, it's like, oh, God, I want that. And my next thought is, no, my kids don't need mommy on crutches. You know, we can't live this way anymore. And so you do. You live a certain way the one thing of not having insurance is you live a careful life. I doubt if, let's into that. Now, you've got... Let's see. We got the O'Donnell thing. We talked about Avon. I want to put that up again. Anybody who knows a woman who hasn't had mammogram in a couple of years, find your local. Find whatever local hospital supports that Avon program. And it should be all over the country. I went for a mammogram last year, and I walked in, and Karen was there, and she said, you're okay? And I said, yeah. And she said, you're the first person I ever said you have cancer to. And so the fact that I was up and walking and whatever was an amazing victory for all of them. And again, by Avon, it's these folks have a good thing. They are good people. Now,
that's vitally important information, and I appreciate it. So, I mean, local providers have this information, or I mean, I assume there's some sort of website. Do you know?
you know, mine was just Tucson Medical Center, TMC, here, had the program. And I called, and I said, so about the Avon program? And they said, yes, ma'am, you want an appointment? And I said, I certainly do. And, you know, one thing led to another, and I ended up living. And with me, it was all serendipity. I had, but I don't know how it works, but I think if you, you know what, a good place to start might be with your neighborhood Avon representative.
Could be, could be. But I'm sure there's got to be a web presence as well. Hey, Fancy, I hate to cut this short, but I have to roll. I want to try to get to the last blinker here before the night's out.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
Okay, folks, have a good one. Bye-bye now.
Take care, Fancy. Bye now. From Arizona, that's Fancy with some valid and valuable information. If you know someone, if you know a woman who hasn't had a mammogram, refer them to the Avon program, please. And my last blinking light is not a blinking light anymore. So that's the program for this evening. By the way, credit where credit is due on two fronts. First of all, you know, we give fundamentalist Christians down the road on Wednesday night prayer meeting. But the ones who really try, and I don't feel like it's necessary that I do this, but I want to do it anyway. The ones who get it right and try to walk in the footsteps of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, when they do it right, they do it really right. So I want to pass thanks and admiration to a coalition of 28 Christian groups from across denominations who sent a letter Friday to the Environmental Protection Agency calling for the immediate action to stop mountaintop removal, but good forever. The letter says, and I quote, as Christians, we are called to be good stewards of God's creation, to love and care for our neighbors, and to speak out against injustice. As Appalachia's communities and ecosystems suffer, we feel called by our faith to speak out against the unnecessary practice of mountaintop removal. We believe only God should move mountains. Closing the Clean Water Act loophole is a good first step. To prevent further devastation, we are calling on the EPA to move forward with a new Clean Water Act rule to prevent the use of mining waste as fill material, which is then dumped into Appalachian streams. As part of our call to be stewards of creation, we have a duty to use the land responsibly, to manage it so that it serves the good of all, and to protect it for future generations and for all life. Establishing the Clean Water Act rule is one step in doing that. Thanks very much to them. Secondly, another case of getting it right, and you can't overestimate the guts that it took to do this. A group of nuns, Catholic nuns, 60 leaders of religious orders representing 59,000 Catholic nuns, has sent a letter to Congress. Can you imagine how much it takes for a nun to stand up to a gang of bishops? It takes a lot of nerve, because there's no more misogynistic organization on the planet than the Roman Catholic Church. Women who have devoted their lives to their faith, who are told that they are not good enough to be an actual priest, and yet they stay with it. 60 leaders of religious orders representing 59,000 Catholic nuns sent the following to Congress. The health care bill that has been passed by the Senate and that will be voted on by the House will expand coverage to over 30 million uninsured Americans. While it is an imperfect measure, it is a crucial next step in realizing health care for all. It will invest in preventive care. It will bar insurers from denying coverage based on pre-existing conditions. It will make crucial investments in community health centers that largely serve poor women and children. And despite false claims to the contrary, in other words, this is where they're calling their bishops liars, and despite false claims to the contrary, the Senate bill will not provide taxpayer funding for elective abortions. It will uphold longstanding conscience protections, and it will make historic new investments, $250 million, in support of pregnant women. This is the real pro-life stance, and we as Catholics are all for it. That took guts that no bishop could ever dream of having. Kudos to those 59,000 Roman Catholic nuns. And so we close the program. Thanks for joining us for Prayer Meeting Wednesday. We'll be back tomorrow evening. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you all. Begora or something. Thanks as ever go out to everyone who helps make this happen, starting with you, who keep the lights on by hitting the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com or by sending your contributions in via snail mail to the address listed there under the Contribute tab. It is sorely needed. It is sorely needed every month, and your sacrifices in keeping this going are not only appreciated but cherished. Thanks also go out to Peter Godbold, to John Fox, to Ben Birch, to Sue, to Lottie, to the News Ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy, to my head writer, David in Tennessee, to Matt Osborne, our Southeast correspondent at Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. Also, as always, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.